All right, it's Joel Radio. Welcome in, everybody. Joel Fragamenti with you. Corey Hall, as always.
Shalom.
There he is. Post-Memorial Day. It's summertime, Corey.
Yes.
Look at the number of bare legs in this room. Would you look around?
I'm not.
Oh, no? You're wearing slacks? I can hardly tell. Corey's summer and winter wardrobe is really only differentiated by the length of the hem.
He goes from brown to tan.
Corey Hall here, and of course, we have another guest for you. Veteran comedian Mark Sweetman's here.
Hey,
hey, Mark.
Hey.
Mark Sweetman's been around a lot. When did you start doing stand up? When did you first step on stage?
First step on stage?
Yeah, first time on stage. What year was it?
77.
70 fucking. I mean, 77.
Yeah, right. Veteran comedian's one of those euphemisms. Like,
right. I'm actually a veteran comedian.
Confirmed bachelor.
Well, I think
it's
veteran,
just a gentle way of saying aged.
Yeah.
Well,
I would say a veteran comedian is somebody who put comedian on his tax form.
Okay. Sure.
Or if they have done it at least 6 years.
Right. And
regularly.
Yeah. You know, and somebody who made money. But in 77, was there any money to make then? Or was that a good time or a bad time?
It was I didn't get paid until 79, so it was two
yeah,
years.
So, well, that's.
But I mean, you know, by today's standards, where people are working for free.
Yeah,
and
well,
they
that's.
And they call it a career, you yeah. know. I mean, it's hard to say. But in 77, I was using a fake ID. Down in the cast corridor.
Oh, okay.
And so I was. It was
that's dedication to to have a fake ID to go to bars in the hood of Detroit.
But that was
that's where you got stage time.
But
though.
you're pre comedy club, really.
Yes,
I
yeah.
Mean, you're pre.
In fact, I was at Wayne State, and one of the reasons I was performing in the cast corridor is because I was at Wayne State and it was yeah. easy to get around
sure,
there.
Yeah.
And I selected a school. I didn't have a car. I selected a school that had. Was in a city that I could get around on buses, and believe it or not, back in the 70s, the bus system actually got you around Detroit. And
so much has changed.
So much has changed.
The old iron pimp. The bus.
And one of the I used to go into the jazz, rock, country, cast corridor was great. They call it Midtown now, but
yeah.
the cast corridor was great. It was a mixture of.
You knew it when it was the new Miami.
Yes, it was the new Miami.
Was it really the new Miami?
Yeah, there's a bar down there.
The old Miami?
There's a bar called the old Miami, and it was once the new Miami.
It was called the new Miami. The new Miami was closer to the Verner Highway,
okay,
which is what it was called before 75 went through, though, and became the Fisher Freeway. It's a long way back.
Well, my dad used to work in the city, when I was a kid. And he would talk about going to the strip clubs in the cash corridor, and
well, we had everything.
There were nightclubs, and
yeah,
you know,
was,
all kinds
there was
of stuff.
There was really everything. There was a place for a 17-year-old kid to do comedy.
Yeah.
If there was a place for a 17-year-old kid to do comedy and some 90-year-old guy to get his nut off,
yeah,
I mean, they had everything.
I told my dad, I mean, this would have been in like the 90s, and I said, I'm going down to the Gold Dollar to see, you know. I said, I'm going out with friends. Where are you going? He goes, I'm going to Gold Dollar. He goes, that strip club? And I go, Dad, it's you know.
It had gone yeah. While when I was down there, it had gone from strip club to transvestite.
The White Stripes were playing there.
Well,
and I'm like,
no,
yeah.
This is
yeah,
before
yeah,
the White
exactly,
Stripes.
No, yeah,
when
yeah.
I was down there, it had gone from a strip club to a La Cage aux Folles male
burlesque.
Female impersonator.
Oh, for,
yeah. Yeah, my wife and I actually went through there about 82, 83. And we almost bought the place.
Oh, yeah? It was,
yeah.
And what are you thinking about, like, stand-up there? Or?
I think it's available now.
The land is worth
you
more.
You saved
than,
your money.
The
yeah.
land is worth more. If you take the thing out, yeah. the land is worth
it's
more.
It's really
now.
Disturbing because, like, the Gold Dollar was a bar I hung out at regularly.
Yeah.
And for about 5 years,
it was a hipster
for about
music
5 years,
venue,
yeah. It was the White Stripe, when the whole Detroit garage rock, you know, sound was going on at the, like, turn of the century. It was a cool place to go for about 5 years, and then the guy sold it and moved away. And now it looks like it looks like a Roman ruin. It's returned to the earth in such an incredible.
Although the cast corridor in general is way better
than
it used to be.
Yeah, that particular block is not.
But
good.
That block is still needs.
Well,
somewhere.
You go down there. Have you been down there lately?
Yeah,
it's. I mean, it's just there's building all over
yeah,
the place.
Absolutely,
down there.
You can starting from Wayne State. It's sort of like spreading south from Wayne State and sort of north from. the entertainment district, but there's still
the
a gas.
Order, for those of you,
there's a gap in there,
and I know there are some. There's not a gap like the actual store, but
no, there's not a gap. no Old Navy, no Gap,
but
no Banana
is,
Republic.
It's Cass Avenue,
yeah,
and it goes south from the university, Wayne State University. So it's always been a college-y area, but at times it's been.
Well,
seedier than others, and now there's...
Well, it was for most of my life, as yes. And, you know, even as a young man, adult, it was Skid Row. I mean, it was Detroit's version of the Bowery. I mean, it was bums, crack,
a lot of heroin,
prostitution.
Crack wasn't there yet.
Okay.
Because I did live down there for a while. Crack was not... Crack
you guys were still doing PCP back then.
Angel
much.
Dust.
I tell you what, though. All the bar owners that I would go on stage for, they all had some... Either they... One dealt drugs, another guy kind of knew... Everybody kind of was connected. Sure. The bar owners ran legitimate businesses.
Right.
But all knew where to get... Whatever
it's
it
part
was,
of the
whatever
trade.
It was that you wanted, that whatever you came to the Cass Corridor for, they knew where.
And I've always heard as a bar, even like a bartender in a busy bar, that you have to have those connections.
Oh sure, it's like, a cab driver.
Even here in Ferndale, I knew a girl who was, she went to rehab for coke or something, and I said one night, and she was over that now, and she legitimately wasn't doing drugs. And I said, how about we just pop up to, actually, I'm not going to name the bar, but, you know, there's a bar around the corner that's a nice bar.
Right.
So let's pop over there. Oh, I can't go there. Why is that? And she's like, well, you know, there's going to be coke. I said, well, we don't talk to the coke people. She goes, well, no, the guys who work there. And I go, oh, okay, in that case. So, you know, yeah, there is that reputation of having that. You ever have any experience with that, Corey? I mean, you were a doorman at a bar.
Not at the bar I worked at, but
your bar was not a drug bar.
I have been in many an establishment where is. There's always a underground economy.
Sure,
there's always wherever you are, like on any level of any business. Like when I worked at the Bagel Deli, we would have like a trade system with all the other, you know, like all the other places in town. We'd give salads to the girls upstairs who had pipe shop. You know what I mean? Like. There was a whole an underground network. Of
there
all
is,
these,
yeah, sure.
Any, you know, if you work at the ice cream place, you trade them bagels or whatever.
Right.
And back and forth. So that extends to narcotics.
I used to trade movie passes for Arthur Treacher's Fish and Chips.
There you go.
I mean, if you want to get real illicit, like we can go there.
Sure.
Yeah. That was at the Universal Mall.
Rarely were the Arthur Treacher coupons traded in the Cass Corridor.
No,
for what,
I'm just saying any service industry.
Sure,
absolutely.
Any
bar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something's going out of the back door.
Yeah.
Whatever it is. Yeah. There's, you know, there's some kind of deal going on.
All right.
A lot of those places are, the Third Street Saloon is still around.
Yeah.
The Bronx is still around. The old Miami, the new Miami.
Yeah.
Union Street is still around.
Yeah.
Union Street never put me up. They were sort of sanitized. They were on Woodward. And
okay.
So they had a lot of the
and
professors.
And they had a show?
Yeah. Well, they had, all of them had live entertainment.
Yeah.
But, Jimbo's is gone. Anderson's Gardens is gone. Cobb's Corner is gone.
Yeah.
Burns is gone.
Mario's, was that there?
Mario's is still there. They never ran. They didn't. Never did. Some of these places, Traffic Jam would never have.
Have
jazz or comics or anything like that.
Well, they do now.
A lot of them.
They have improv now.
They have improv. Traffic Jam.
Oh, wait a minute. They don't have comedy. They have improv. Let me take that back. But yeah, go ahead.
Hold on.
But I mean, a lot of
yes or
Let me just qualify for everybody.
Traffic Jam is a big, huge restaurant that like is. There's institutions. There's places that have always been there, and they've weathered the storm. Because I used to hang out in the '90s.
Yeah. Sure, yeah. When I was a coffee shop
next to the Bronx.
Right.
And we would hang out there, and it was the Bronx, Zoot's, and then the Blackstone Motel.
Okay.
Which was just every hooker and dope head and fiend would be walking in and out of there. And, like, the laundromat was an innovation.
Yeah.
When they opened the laundromat, we're like, this is amazing. I can't believe no one thought of putting a laundromat in here before. I mean, it was bad times.
What got me was Burton International School used to be there along 4th Street. And, they've moved a couple of times. They're over on Martin Luther King now, closer to the bridge. But there were always kids at school, but you never saw kids any other time. You'd say, I'm going to school. And
say, oh, yeah.
They'd never be out playing.
Like, where did they live? Did not live there?
Where did these kids live?
They were bussed in. Under heavy guard.
All those tenement houses that were down there, though, these 4- and 5-story tenement houses, these 4 flights up and things like that, they would have about 12 to 16 units each, and they'd just be lined Cass Avenue. They're all gone.
Yeah.
They're all gone. So that's thousands and thousands of people moved out.
Completely displaced.
So...
It's weird. People are moving back into the neighborhood now, and it's like there's Shinola, which is a custom high-end
right next to TJ's.
Well, and it's like literally where it used to be, you know, Stubby Nubby, the one-armed crackhead, is now a, you know, you can buy a watch for
$600. You know, my opinion on that is, how many people do we need brewing beer?
I think Traffic Jam makes their own
beer. But I'm saying, like, there's
Traffic Jam, the Motor City Brewing Works, and now Jolly Pumpkin just moved in there.
Right, but
so
I mean,
three breweries
within
100 feet of
each
other.
Does Hopcat bring?
Hopcat doesn't make their own beer, but they have hundreds.
They also all craft beer, though, right?
They have a lot of taps.
They have lots of taps. But, you know, the thing is, you know, my feeling is a city that cannot survive on, you know, breweries alone and, you know, artisans and these kind of things. Restaurants.
Eventually,
you need like a factory. You do need that kind of stuff, and those people really aren't moving in. So while Detroit is, you know, it's
kind of hard for them to move in because if you look at what they're building now, they all need that. You're never going to see a Piquette Avenue plant that goes up 4 stories.
But
everything's got to be spread out.
You know, there's businesses that people need, and look, you know, guys like Quicken Loans and employs a lot of people, and a lot of them live down there. And I know people that have jobs in the city they'll get their rent. I don't know. They get a credit
they get a subsidy
to live down there, and that's all fine and good. But, you know, Quicken Loans is like that's the story, by the way. In 20 years, we're going to go, well, when Quicken Loans went under. that is the story. That is happening.
The only reason they're around is because they kind of flew under the radar in 2008 when everything else crashed.
I'm not sure but basically they're being accused of the same practices that put everybody else
under. And now they're doing the same thing.
They're being investigated. And, you know, and it's like every, you know, and their strategy, for those of you who don't know how Quicken Loans, like, employs people in Detroit, is they hire anybody. I believe they require a degree, but it doesn't have to be in finance. You know what I'm saying? Like, how many English majors do they employ at Quicken Loans? Like, tons of them. And they're just, you know, they employ everybody.
Took my criminal justice degree to Quicken Loans.
And they go over to Quicken Loans, and they're making real good money for just getting out of college. And, you know, they're working, you know, 14 hours a day, sometimes 6 days a week. But, you know, but it's like when that goes away, man,
You're trying to tell me that a financial renovation of a city being spearheaded by a mortgage loan company.
Yes.
With shady practices.
May be doomed to fail.
Are you suggesting that this is a quicksand situation?
It's not the auto industry in the 1920s and 30s.
Right, unsecured home loans.
It is.
Yeah,
it's
nothing could go wrong there.
But listen, but that's why we have the craft beer market and the vodka distilleries and the artisan watches that will support this fucking city.
As nice as all that stuff, and I'm glad all that stuff there, and I marvel, you know, I'll go and get, like, you can get, like, great food now and stuff that was not there when it was Stubby Nubby.
Yeah.
It's great, but you're right, you do often go, what's holding this up?
There really isn't anything. It really is. It really is a veneer of nicety.
On Cass now, there's a building called the Auburn, which has a bunch of little shops in it. And there's a place in there called Hugh, which is space age bachelor pad stuff.
I've seen that place.
And the guy sells like tiki glasses and like pipes and like shaving kits.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there going, it's like a high end retailer like you'd see in like Manhattan.
The rents must be nothing because
who is buying all this stuff?
Yeah.
The rents are higher than they should be.
Are the rents higher?
I think right now it's popular, so you kind of.
I guess the rents are going up.
Well, look at the east side of Woodward, though. I mean, we're talking about Midtown on the Cass Quarter side, and then there's the other side and DMC and. That new housing unit they're talking about putting in Brush Park,
yeah,
that's gonna hold that end up. But It's still an island. It's really,
Detroit.
It's really an island that
Detroit,
is surrounded.
It's several.
It's
different.
Detroit is still a cunt hair from chaos at any given second.
Detroit's several different islands. There's Woodbridge and Corktown.
Well,
there's
funny,
like little neighborhoods.
I talked to a guy from out of town, and he goes, "So if I go downtown, he goes, I'm going to be like mugged and I'm going to be raped and murdered." And I go, "No, if you go to the bad neighborhoods in Detroit, there's just nobody fucking there. It just feels like the zombie apocalypse. It's not like you might be bitten
by a feral dog.
Yeah, I mean you're not.
There might be.
You know,
there's like dingoes.
Like, but
there's like a pack of dingoes that wanders the wastelands. I'm not kidding.
Absolutely.
How many have you seen like just random stray dogs pulling a tire?
So it's Detroit has sort of gone from from gangs roaming the streets and criminals roaming the streets to just fucking nobody roaming the streets. And I don't think that's a whole lot. I mean, I guess that's better on some level.
Where the real violence and stuff is, you have to go to the east or west side.
Yeah.
Into the neighborhoods.
We've had those murders on the east side, the girls that drove into Detroit to score some
fire. Sure,
Where the girl got killed
from the points.
The girls from the points drive in to get theirs. And they get popped or something.
I mean, it is. I guess it's a good. I guess the equation is where there's no people, no one can get murdered. I mean, that's sort of Detroit's path to success. You know,
but
where no one lives, no one can be killed. So that's a good thing.
Well, the other thing that you have to explain to people about Detroit is its size.
Yeah,
it's just mammoth.
Isn't it like you could put all seven boroughs of New York Boston?
You could put like two Boston's in.
Somebody said it was Boston, San Francisco, and I can't remember the third city.
Okay.
There's three Boston, San Francisco, and another second.
It's 138 square miles of the city itself.
It's big.
It's massive. I mean, I there's parts of it I've never seen.
Sure, absolutely.
And I've been here my whole life, and it's like, and it just there are parts that are just completely.
Yeah.
Nothing there. It's Return to the Earth.
It's
Arnold Schwarzenegger and like a pack of Dobermans with armor on them riding around the way. What is best in life? It's totally.
They should shoot the next Mad Max
in
Detroit. Or walking down. I guess the goddamn governor fucked up. But you know that End of the World movie that I shot, Parts Per Billion, that I'm in for 2 seconds as an extra with Hill Harper. I think I've probably talked about that on the show. They shot that right down there completely convincingly, right behind the Motor City Casino. And it's funny, I drove by there the other day, and the liquor store that I'm like running out of is like open. And I was like, I was fucking in there. I don't think that place was set dressed. Just looked shut down.
But
you know,
here's what amazes me. You have all the authenticity you need.
Yeah.
All the grit, all the abandoned structures, all the stuff you need. And that's what has made people come here.
Michael Bay shot a couple Transformer
movies here. But the two cop shows they did, 187, and then Low Winter Sun.
Yeah, Low Winter Sun.
Low Winter Sun, I turned off in the first 10 minutes, and I'll tell you why. Because they had Mark Strong? Is it the guy? He always plays a heavy. He's a British actor.
I never saw.
He
the
played
show.
The same role in the British version, of the show.
Okay.
Well, so they have this guy. He's supposed to be a Detroit cop, and they. Kill one of their colleagues in some shady deal.
Yeah.
They rub out the guy who's going to rat on them.
Yeah.
And he goes and he gets in his car and drives home. And he drives home to this completely fucked up, burnt out, cracked. Like, his is the only house on the block.
Yeah.
No fucking cop lives in
neighborhood, right?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Cops live in cop neighborhoods. And I went, if you're, they can't get that one deep, right? Like, anybody with a sense of anything knows that's wrong. And you're like, I'm already out. You can't get the Detroit stuff right.
Yeah.
Cops don't live in the crack houses. Let's break that down.
Folks. Well, I used to.
The thing is, they're not doing these just for Detroiters.
But that's true anywhere.
That's true.
Cops
I had to move to L.A. before I realized that cab drivers and movies were really taking these people for a ride. They're really working up the fare here to take these people. First, they're along the beach.
Yeah.
And all suddenly, they're riding down Sunset Boulevard.
I love to play L.A. geography in movies because they'll be like, well, okay, they started out in Long Beach, and now they're in Riverside. Yeah. And then now they're back. It's just incredible.
Well,
all over
I used to watch Detroit 187 just to see. I knew all the extras. Were all people that I had done. You know, that's when they were doing all the film incentive stuff. Yeah. And I was on one of those. And you know, I stood next to Michael Imperioli for a couple hours. You know, on set, and I would just watch that and just go, okay, I know that guy and that guy and that guy and that guy. You know, you see people come back for multiple shows. you know, they tried to like recycle, recycle the extras enough. And, but yeah, they definitely whiffed on Detroit, I think, too. I think it's hard. It's hard. It's, the stuff about Detroit, I think that we all understand from living here, people just don't, you know, you can't make it, you can't fictionalize it because people won't believe it. It's like, it's stranger than fiction.
On
a lot of the stuff.
On the other hand.
A lot of the stuff.
You know, on the other hand, we have restaurants and bars.
Yeah.
Like, it's not.
I know.
It's,
but.
There is that element that's completely insane.
Yeah.
And then there's much of the city is just a functional,
but
normal,
it's fine. But, you know,
if
you travel to another city, though, everybody's got restaurants. You know, it's not. We've got restaurants and coffee shops.
No, I know. But
fucking everybody's got restaurants and coffee shops,
no,
you asshole.
I'm just saying that people.
Get a fucking job.
I'm just saying people get this notion that, like, there's nothing there at all.
Sure, no.
And it's like Thunderdome. And you're going to immediately have to fight a giant with a midget strapped to his back.
Many places, many
resources
things are better than they used to be.
Yes.
It's still got a fucking long way to go.
Well,
a long way.
Well, I had dinner with my friend who lives in Berlin now.
Yeah.
Who, you know, is one of my best friends, but mm-hmm. he's spent the last decade in L.A. and then mm-hmm. Germany. And I'm just like, well, everything here is better now than it was like 15 years ago. You know?
Yeah.
Like, there's a general overall improvement.
Sure.
In just everything.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean we're like Berlin.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's not like we're, you know, we're nowhere near that.
It's still tough. All right, let's get on to
we have comedy shows out the end.
Well, let's talk about comedy.
That's right. We got them all.
Where do you want to go with comedy? Well, let's start talking about Letterman. David Letterman ended. I know the last show, me and Corey, gave it a little bit of a send-off, but he still had another week of shows left. So he came and did those. I would say the end of Letterman, certainly not, while I enjoyed and I watched every night, was not, you know, classic Letterman in any sense. There was nothing there to.
Well, they replayed a lot of the classics.
Well, that was the best stuff about it. I thought the sort of the final run of guests was disappointing in a lot of ways. I thought the we talked about Howard Stern's appearance last time, but you know
Howard in his wig,
yeah,
made
Howard
a great appearance.
Now there was talk. How many are you guys inside enough to know about the? About the Leno appearance, there was talk about Leno.
There was talk about it, but I think Dave denied it in every, you know, in every interview. Dave said no. Dave's, you know, they would ask him, and he'd say Leno's not coming. I don't believe he was, but he also wasn't booking the final shows. I don't think. I think they, you know, he sort of turned it over to some level.
He stopped working 2.5
Yeah,
years
yeah.
Ago.
So, but I mean, and I'm glad they didn't do Leno because I think Leno's. The ship has sort of sailed on that feud. Nobody cares.
Would have been fine.
But even like, you know, the Bill Murray was the final guest, I guess, technically, in the sense of he was the last guy to really.
He was
the
first guest, too, I think.
Yeah, and
Bill Murray whiffed.
Bill Murray's been out of material for years on that show. I told you when he came on and flew around as Peter Pan,
yes,
which would have been like last fall, I was like, this just wasn't good. And Murray really,
well,
you know had nothing.
Will Ferrell's been making the crazy talk show appearances.
Okay. Yeah.
Where'd he go? Like, was it Conan where he went in as Little Debbie? Like, he's been doing. Will Ferrell's upped his game.
Yeah. Well,
his appearances.
You
are
probably
crazy.
Have to when you're appearing that much. But I think Bill Murray was a letdown. You know, George Clooney did this thing where he handcuffed himself to Dave, and then they had to carry that bit on for a couple days, and that was pretty lousy.
I think the highlight of that last week was Norm Macdonald.
Norm Macdonald was fantastic. Did we talk about Norm last time we were on? I hadn't seen it yet. I watched it later.
I tweeted for all my West Coast friends.
Yeah, that was great. Norm did.
You got to catch
Norm. So look up the clip of Norm. I didn't pull it for the show, but Norm. Norm did an old Letterman joke that he heard.
He
saw Dave a million years ago and said, you know, this is a joke that I heard of David Letterman, and it inspired me to be a comedian. And Norm was crying, and Norm
actually cried.
Norm has become a great.
I bet Jim Norton shit all over him.
But Norm has really become like an A-list guest of that kind of a talk show. You know, he's become that guy, which is funny because even when he did SNL 40, we all said, "Well, Norm was like the best guy on SNL 40, or one of the best guys." And boy, who would have thought that based on his career on SNL, he's become this this giant, this guy that always kind of does the right thing. So good for him.
And he got raves for his appearance at the Robin Williams Memorial at the Comedy Store last August too. So I mean, people are just looking to him now to sort of be the comic emeritus, I guess. So.
Well, that's good for him.
Well,
he
did like nobody can do. Norm's stuff is just the stuff he did on Letterman about It's like Germany. The last war they fought was against the world, and it was close.
Yeah,
you know, I'm blowing his jokes.
Yeah,
he's like, you know, that completely blew Norm's jokes, and I apologize. But
well, he's become that guy now.
He's got an unmistakable tone and delivery, and right. Nobody else does.
But if you listen to his stuff, and then look at Letterman's early stuff before he started doing a nightly show when he was just doing stand up. Norm is very similar to Dave back in the 70s. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
and that style is gone. Ironic.
Yeah.
It's
the age of
irony. But that really, I mean, if you look at Letterman, I say Letterman is the most influential guy on television, you know, comedically on television.
Probably.
I mean, really, of my lifetime. I mean, I can't think of a guy. I mean, yeah, Johnny Carson had his thing
More than Warren Michaels?
Yeah, I would probably say Letterman, just because I think there's more of... I think the people that have done SNL and sketch have all pretty much botched it. And, like, you see successful people doing that Letterman. You see Conan and Kimmel and these guys who have done the Letterman style. So Lauren, I think Lauren, Lauren's certainly hugely influential. I don't think as a... But, I mean, what is Lorne Michaels' comedy? I mean, is it the fucking Coneheads? I mean, no one wants to, you know what I'm saying?
There's a Coneheads ad now. What is that?
Wait a minute. Let me take that back. There's
Have you
a
seen
Coneheads.
That shit?
Well, no, but who fucking.
Have you seen that?
I don't want to see anything Coneheads.
It's Jane Curtin and Dan Aykroyd and the goddamn Coneheads.
What else are they going
to
do?
And you're like, you're really beating this bit to the
ground.
Well,
listen, that's my problem. I feel like Letterman. More good comedy was inspired by Letterman than SNL. SNL inspired a lot of shitty guys, let's be honest, right? A lot of people that tried to... SNL, when SNL hit sort of its zeitgeist, a lot of that was stupid. Letterman was never stupid. Letterman was always... Even when Letterman was doing dumb stuff, it was still smart, you know?
Yeah, but to me, Letterman did 33 years... of trying to get into the GE building with the camera crew. Remember that bit?
That was great.
When
he had a basket of fruit and he went in there.
Yes.
And yeah, that was classic.
Do you remember Meg from across the street?
All that stuff. And I was sad that there wasn't more of that brought back for the end, I think. I mean, they showed the clips.
A lot of the stuff is NBC.
Yeah.
You can't show the NBC.
No, but I mean, we didn't. No, they did show the NBC stuff.
Yeah, they
though.
Did, I guess.
Yeah, they did. But I'm saying we didn't catch up with those people.
Yeah.
It seems like Letterman. Like post heart attack, was it kind of a different Letterman?
Well, where are Moochie Burr and Surgical?
I don't know what happened to them.
Did INS get them?
I thought the Rupert G segment when he came back and they recapped sort of the history with Rupert G. I thought that was one of the best segments of the last.
Charismatic figure, Rupert G. Yeah,
did you hear the story?
He
said
has all the raw rampaging sexuality of a middle aged.
Well,
Chinese
no, but that's kind of what was great about him is he was Letterman's puppet when they would do the Man on the Street stuff. And did you hear when they had the segment and he said Rupert and he says, "Now you Rupert, do you know you remember why we stopped doing these?" And Rupert goes, "Yeah, because someone pulled a knife on me." And they're like, "Yeah, that's why we stopped doing it." Which is exactly what they were, you know, Dave certainly when you watch those old clips even last week, that certainly seems like that's what Letterman was looking to get Rupert G, you know, beaten up, you know.
All of that stuff, I think all that stuff, like when they would send how many guys in bear suits can we get into this like subway shop
sure,
or whatever,
yeah.
like You know, all that kind of stuff, which is what the old show, that ironic.
Yeah.
It was just playing with the medium, just jerking with the format of TV. I would want to think that's influential, but who's really doing it?
Well, I think Conan
is the only real disciple still.
No, but you see that you see that in other, you saw that sort of in Tom Green. You saw that in just a lot of people that have come. I mean, look, they're gone. A lot of that too. I mean, a lot of that is coming. But if you see, you see some of the,
I think
Trigger Happy TV and stuff like that. A lot of that was all Letterman.
I think Jimmy Kimmel does some of that.
I think
Colbert and even Stewart do some of that type of thing.
We'll see.
Colbert does a little bit, and I'm really interested to know.
When we talk about like the Daily Show correspondence, I mean that's all based on Letterman, isn't it? Yep. I mean, isn't that
all based on Michael Moore?
Yeah, but it's based on Letterman too. You're right. It is based on Michael Moore.
TV Nation
I'm with you on that. I would also say there wouldn't be a Michael Moore on television without Letterman too.
Probably. It's that Midwestern smartass style, and now we've got we've gotten some fruitcake from, you know, Luton or whatever, Tinsley Park, whatever the hell he's from. Yeah. Singing Grease songs.
Well, look,
playing frisbee golf.
Let's not ruin Letterman with a discussion about James Corden. We've had enough. We've done enough of those on the show.
You're not a James Corden fan?
Corey's not.
I would describe me as the Simon Wiesenthal. James Corden watchers. I will not rest. Until
let's
that
talk about Letterman.
Feckless, no sack having, sissy man. Limp wristed. I don't care if he's actually has a wife. I don't care. He's a homo in the greatest sense of the word. That butt pirate.
Okay.
British.
I'm gonna
salad tosser.
Let's leave it at this and go back
to
Letterman.
Back to fucking Birmingham.
I will listen.
And shovels coal.
I will.
Unfunny bastard.
I will raise my pitchfork and try to run James Corden out of town, but not as long as there's a Jimmy Fallon saturating our areas with his unfunny shit. I will not be anti-James Corden.
Do you remember the show Small Wonder?
Okay, listen.
What if we all put on dresses?
Let's talk about Letterman.
What if we pretended we were robots?
Hey, did
buddy?
James Corden do that?
No, that's just a bit.
That's a Jimmy Fallon bit more than it.
Yeah. I'd already hated you. You were like,
I want to talk about Letterman.
Okay,
please, I swear I don't want to do this.
Okay.
I know, I don't want to do
James
Corden.
Show on
James Corden. We did.
And the first episode, I was in intense, immediate rage at the notion that this guy existed and hated him.
Corey hated
with
him
every
like
fiber of my body
before the titles. I mean,
the second he came on, he started crying and I wanted to beat him like a bully in the playground. I was just like, oh, you're gonna cry, sissy man? He came out and was like, I never thought I'd have this opportunity in my marriage. It's so wonderful. And I was like, you're on television. You're hosting a comedy show. Sack the fuck up. And I hated him instantly. Okay. And then Joel said, well, watch it again. Give it another shot. Give it a try. So I did. And what did he do? They fucking did a bit where they ran out in the street and acted out scenes from Grease in traffic on Melrose. And that's what I wanted him to die.
Look, if he here's my argument, and again, I want to talk about that. He does it better than Jimmy Fallon. I'll give him credit for that.
Oh my god!
If you're gonna do that lame shit, at least do it well. And I think James Corden does. Okay,
it's comedy.
So the final letter.
It's comedy for girls, and as we know, girls don't know about comedy.
But he also is appealing.
Here
if
it
you
comes.
Notice with his bookings. I get no argument for me. No, listen. We'll talk about. Look, we're going to talk about Lena.
You guys don't take calls.
We're going to talk about Lena Dunham in her underwear. We've got female comedy on the agenda.
We've got at least a few regular listeners who send me messages after I say things like this.
But
and I know one of them would love to call.
But the final Letterman, I think another place where the final Letterman whiffed for me, in addition to not bring back, is I think he kind of whiffed on the music. I thought he could have done better with the musical guest. The Bob Dylan was not great. And I know people, you know, that's his new record or whatever. He's singing standards. But I'm sorry, that Bob Dylan was not good.
What, you did not enjoy the Fighters of Foo?
Well, I mean, here's my problem with Foo Fighters. They've been on. They were on for like a whole week back in like whenever that show came on HBO, which I love that show and I do like Foo Fighters. But
he likes Foo Fighters.
But you know, the problem is, you know, he brings on Foo Fighters and then he just plays clips over them. He could have just played a goddamn tape of Foo Fighters.
I don't think that was.
Tom Waits was great. That I'll say. Tom Waits, I really enjoyed. He was on the George Clooney episode. He was actually funnier than Clooney on the couch. And then I thought the song Tom Waits played. But you know, Tom Waits isn't for everybody, and Tom Waits isn't really even for me most of the time.
Tom Waits, though, back in the 80s, that's
right.
The show
and
he was
that was a guy.
Letterman
that
was the only
guy.
Show
now, Mark,
he was going to get on.
You gave Tom Waits his first piano. I know that.
You were back in the cast corridor with
that's
Tom
right,
Waits.
That's right. I know that. You gave him a shot in show
but
business.
But you know, it's funny because Tom Waits in general, I've tried to get into Tom Waits and always kind of failed because I always couldn't find that hook that I like. But I like that song that he did a lot. I think Tom Waits, I respect him maybe more than I like
Tom Waits is a guy I theoretically should like.
Yeah, absolutely. That's how I feel.
And I feel like it's not his fault.
Right.
But Tom Waits, this is an example. The fans of Tom Waits have tainted him for me. Because if you want to determine who is a pseudo-intellectual, coffee shop, drinking gin at 2 in the afternoon, I'm Charles Bukowski fucking phony, faster, look at his collection and see how many Tom Waits albums
he has.
Because that is the shortcut to an air of
I went on. There's all these websites that have, you know, these are. What are Tom Waits' best songs? So I went on a website and I found the top 10 Tom Waits songs, and I just didn't like all of them. I like some of them.
Has been drinking.
I like some of them, not and I me. Like some of them a lot. But I also went like, you know, Harry Nilsson was doing this shit, and I like every Harry Nilsson. So, you know what I mean? Like, right. So I just kind of go.
I can't do the whole Tom Waits.
No, I can't either, and it's too bad because I like a lot of Tom Waits, but I don't like a lot of it. I like some of it, and the stuff that I like a lot. But if you just give me a Tom Waits song, I just kind of go, you know, like.
Well, Mark, now average. In your so Tommy Dorsey.
You mean to talk about when he hired Frank Sinatra?
That's right. What?
Look, stop with that shit and have him talk about Benny Goodman. Be serious for 2 seconds, if you please. No, I don't know. What musically? What do you like, Mark? I don't know that
I'm
about
not a
you.
Big, I'm not a big music person.
But you grew up. You were at the greatest age to be a fan of rock and roll.
You're right, and I you know, Cass Corder was a great place to run into.
Sure,
people,
I mean all those bands that were coming up. You know, the Amboy Dukes and the Stooges.
Well, I was there after they
okay.
got out. I'm talking about the guys that played with them that stayed behind.
Okay, well,
yeah, Rob Tyner used to hang out. In
okay,
all
there
the
you
time,
go,
and Dennis Thompson and. Niagara, remember Niagara?
Okay, sure, Niagara.
Destroy All Monsters,
and all that. Yeah, and those people were still around.
They were still around
when
yeah.
I started hanging out.
Yeah,
they're still around now.
Well, yeah, some of them.
Some of them.
Carrie Lauren, who was in Destroy All Monsters, has Bookbeat over at Oak Park.
Okay,
it's got a bookstore.
Anyway, Mitch Ryder, we'd see. Once
okay,
in a
Mitch
while.
Ryder, yeah,
on a bar stool at Alvin's or something.
Well, all right, the late 70s, they were still kind of a transition from the nightclub format.
It was very weird because we had 2 years of disco that kind of like screwed up all
that
the,
screwed up stand up.
Every bar owner cleared out everything they had, put up the disco lights,
right.
Hired the DJ, and then once they spent all that money, everybody goes, nah, that's
so.
Not
so
it.
Comedy would have been because I was talking to Mark Ridley about this last night. We were talking about Steve Martin, and it's a long story, but he was saying, you know, he saw Steve Martin at. What was basically like a coffee house or something.
He was at the Ravens Gallery
over
on Greenfield.
Okay, that's exactly where he was telling me, the Ravens Gallery.
Yep.
And it was a no alcohol place.
Yeah,
I'd go, yeah, like that's crazy. And but that's where stand up was before.
In the 60s, it was either like
the Hungry Eye, the Bitter End, all of those. The reason they're called that is because there's no drinking.
Yeah.
And the Hungry Eye, it's like a deli. The Bitter End was like herbs and and teas and things like that.
That's crazy.
So, yeah, so there was like the Saul, what's his name, with the sweater?
Mort Saul.
There was like the Mort Saul kind of coffee shop comic.
Right.
And then you had the nightclub kind of Jack Carter, Alan King, kind of the Macambo. There was a whole like nightclubby sort of situation, and that by the 70s it started to die out. Right? I mean, those
it really had. In fact,
those were starting to fade away.
They were starting to fade away. When I started getting paid, late 70s, early 80s. In fact, the first guy that hired me was Leo.
Okay, Leo.
Leo
DeFore.
Saw my first open mic at the Castle was
World's Funniest Canadian.
World's Funniest Canadian.
I think that's how he feels himself.
Was
I believe we just named a funnier Canadian.
Well, listen.
Moments ago. Who appeared on Letterman. But, okay.
All right. We'll go with
an
Leo.
Interesting
listen.
Booking.
Let Leo have that, at least.
But anyway, Leo hired me right my first open mic at the Castle.
That's
he was
awesome.
There, and he hired me off of that. And I went over to Windsor, and the Windsor still had was like about 10 years behind us.
Yeah.
So in 79, they had the club scene that we had in 69.
Okay,
and
so
69 was a weird club scene because, now I'm 9, so I'm speaking out of studying the history of it. I wasn't there. But in 69, we were going from your Burns and Carlin comedy team at the Rooster Tail type stand-up comedy to George Carlin... You know, with the long
solo.
Hair type of
thing.
Solo
Robert Klein.
And so 66, 67, 68, 69, we started opening up the East Town, the Cinderella, the Grandy Ballroom, things like that, and the Stooges and MC5 and the Frost and SRC. All these bands were coming out and sort of pushing the music boundary away from expanding it from what Motown had done in the early 60s. So it really made Detroit kind of a live music capital. That wasn't really good for comedy. So comedy kind of moved over to comedy had kind of moved over to Windsor. We had the Top Hat, we had the Excelsior, we had a bunch of clubs over there that would run floor shows, which were like what you'd see old films of Martin and Lewis doing their show at the Copacabana.
Yeah.
We had the band behind them, and even though Martin and Lewis were the headliners, they were the headliners because they were the big names.
Yeah.
They'd have some, who knows, singer, somebody you never heard of before, from Jersey or New York or Chicago or where they could get them in from cheap, would provide the singing. They'd have some girl that could dance, but really the headliners were Mark.
It was
the
whole, like, it was a production. It was a show.
Yeah, it was a show, and it was, and everything was, everything except Jerry Lewis was scripted type of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Right. Well, yeah, that, well, then that goes back to like vaudeville and that kind of
were
stuff
you,
too. I mean,
and so we had in Windsor all the time Woody Woodbury, Bob Posch, Ron Coden.
Ron Coden's still around.
He is still around.
Plays
other,
like every Wednesday at O'Mara's,
you know,
right?
All those other guys are still around too, but they've all moved to Florida. Ron's the only one that stayed here. They're all working the senior resort.
Okay, well, that's a circuit to play.
Well, go where the money is.
That's where I'm going to be in 10 years.
Yeah, there you go.
Were you a guy that would, like, when you were a kid, would you watch the comics on Ed Sullivan? And
sure.
Were you like a nerd for that stuff?
Yeah. Well, my dad was a frustrated non-performing stand-up comic.
Okay.
And so it was like,
so he just
if he knew us,
in the shop.
He would. And he owned furniture stores. And yeah. We'd always have office, and that was sort of the we talk about comics in those days would borrow each other's jokes.
Yeah.
The salesman would borrow each other's sticks
well,
and routines,
much,
too.
Much like
you know?
Music, the idea of your own material wasn't necessarily universal.
Right. Well, that
until the early 70s.
Well, that was... Well, the Beatles and Dylan really innovated on the music end there. Because everyone would just... Even, you know, in the Beatles' day, everyone would play the same covers. So that's why the Beatles played a lot of, like... They would play the B-side of... The Elvis song or whatever.
I mean,
in
their first four albums or so were loaded
with
covers.
They had a lot
covers,
of covers.
So.
In the Beatles had a lot of covers.
Sure. But they also like to not be, you know, they would have these bands because they'd play, you know, three bands on a bill and they'd be the third band. And you know, people had already done.
Well, that happens at comedy.
People had done the Elvis tracks before they get the stage. So
if you do one of these sardine can open mics where they shove 14 guys in there.
Sure, yeah.
You're just going to go, well, there goes that premise.
Right.
Yeah, Taco Bell drive-thru. There you go.
Let's cross Bruce Jenner off and keep
Bruce
moving
Jenner,
along.
And okay.
These have all been done.
Transvestites, there we go. And
I had a meeting with Harry Jarkey a few years ago. He passed away last summer, but he's out in Palm Springs, and that's where my dad retired to. And I just looked him up because I had heard that he was out there and was still alive. And we had a little chat about it, and I told him I was from Detroit and everything.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how in the days when he and Danny Thomas were doing it, I mean, this goes way back before he was...
Danny Thomas! I'm getting into my... Corey knows I'm doing a Gilbert.
He said...
The story is that Danny Thomas... Had a glass coffee.
I don't think Sweetman has the same Danny Thomas story.
I know the Danny Thomas.
Okay,
story.
But
you know who told me that story was Bill Schaft, who's the head writer. Bill Schaft, the head writer at Letterman.
Okay,
he used to come here once a year. Do you guys remember? Have you been around long enough to have seen Bill Schaft?
I don't think so. No,
I think he's been with Letterman 25 years now. So he stopped doing stand up when he got that gig, and he's their head writer now. He started off as just a staff writer, but Mark Ridley and I used to play golf with. Bill every time he came to town. Yeah. And
you got a bucket? Are you catching all these names?
they're dropping from the sky, man.
So, but anyway, he's the one that told me the Danny Thomas story.
Okay.
He told me a lot of great stories. He's got a ton of them.
Thomas story that you were going to tell, though?
Harry Jarkey and Danny Thomas and a bunch of these other guys that he named that I didn't know. Here's what they used to do. They would go into clubs, and they would only, not like today where you go in and ask for a spot.
Yeah.
They would ask for a spot, and it was assumed that they'd get paid.
Yeah.
One, there was a union back then that you had to get paid, the union heavies would come around and take care of that. But if they didn't have a spot for them, he said sometimes they would park cars.
Okay.
And if the place didn't have... And then they'd hang around long enough, and if the shows went long enough, they says, well, we haven't got anything else. And somebody goes, well, you know, that comic's out there parking cars. They go, all right, stop parking cars, get up on stage.
Wow, that's...
And they put the comic on, at 1:30 in the morning or something like that.
You hearing all this, Corey?
Yeah.
Get ready to park some cars, brother. Jesus. No, I mean, there is that thing now where comics... Like, even like last night, Wednesday night, Comedy Castle, we had an issue with like one guy no-showed and then another guy we couldn't put on because he was having like a medical condition. So I was plucking comics out of the crowd and throwing them on stage
like
last night.
Joel's like the emergency goalie.
No, I didn't go on Comedy Castle, but I pulled.
But you're there.
Yeah, I did that. Well, I've done that a few times at Comedy Castle.
You work at the club,
sure.
And once in a while,
somebody didn't show up
because
of a snowstorm. Yeah, and then
you guys are old enough to remember the emergency goalie.
That's right. No, like,
who was that guy that played for the Wings that ended up playing a game for the Maple Leafs? You ever hear that story?
I have heard that story.
Every team had a trainer that was the emergency goalie.
Okay.
This is before they played in Mass. Well, one time Toronto needed an emergency goalie. And the only one in the building
was the
Red Wings,
equipment
manager.
Well, didn't they?
And so he went over, and this is a professional league game that counts, and you've got your equipment manager playing.
Didn't
for
they
the
just
opposition.
Send an assistant coach out to play goalie recently in the NHL this season?
Oh, I'm sure
I think they
might have.
There was
I
don't know who it was. I can't remember the guy, whoever
right,
it was. But
right. Or when they
it was,
go,
it was
they
like
go
a retired
like,
goalie.
They go into like
they
12 innings and they're out of relief pitchers. Joel is there. Joel is the
I'm
the,
well,
the emergency.
I'm saying last night, I threw Tom McCarthy was there watching the show, and I go, we need you to go up, man.
Oh, that's
good. These are like the waitresses needed more time to get the checks together. And
right.
It was like, well, all right, you're going up, and now you're going
now
up.
But that is a good
thing. That's a rare thing, but that does
well,
happen. Well,
but the problem I find now in clubs is there aren't comics hanging out there as much.
No. But
that Tom was there.
People hang out on the Wednesday at Comedy Castle because they want that to happen.
Right.
It almost never does, but yet guys keep showing up. And please, if you're listening to this and you're a comedian and you want to go on stage at Comedy Castle, call on Thursday. Don't hang around on Wednesday because you're probably not going to get a spot.
Good call.
So anyway.
It isn't one of those. The Castle's not becoming one of those rooms where there's more comics than.
No. We had a nice turnout of actual audience. But that happened last. All right, let's talk more comedy.
Well, where was the Castle when you started? Because I know Mark had various different
locations. It was on Orchard Lake Road and Pontiac Trail, corner of Orchard Lake and Pontiac Trail.
Well, that's a hot neighborhood. That's a real. And I'm sure in 1978 it had a lot of activity.
I'm telling you what, I recently.
It's almost like where Laugh Tracks is, right? It's not too far from there, right? Actually, it's not. It would be. It's east of there. Yeah,
a lot farther.
But that's on Pontiac Trail, isn't it? Laugh Tracks isn't Pontiac Trail just north of there?
Yeah, but
it's Pontiac Trail's a long road.
I think you have to cut back some brush as you go along Pontiac Trail in order to get to.
It was called Pontiac Trail because Chief Pontiac led the. What was
sure?
Yeah, what was their tribe?
Actually, they had the teepee of laughs out there, didn't they?
It was actually cut by the the Comanches or Chippewas or whatever.
Go ahead and Google the meeting place because the meeting place was the there's a great picture online because I've seen it recently.
That was Mark's. That's where
the original comedy castle. Yeah. And it was called the meeting place, but it was M-E-A-T, I think.
Oh.
Like a meat market type thing. They had no qualms about the idea that they were
singles bar.
They were a singles bar.
Well,
but
picture. Hey, by the way, if someone wants to bring back a singles bar,
shockingly not finding it.
There's an old picture.
Youngstown, Ohio has a
hold on. All right, guys, that's going to do it for the show. I got to head out to Youngstown. There's a singles bar.
Well, there's a picture. I'll find it and send it to you guys.
You're telling me you're not now you're here in Ferndale. You're going to tell me you're not trolling for pussy over at
the meatery? Oh yeah, there is a meatery.
There's
now.
A place that sells meat.
No, I think the problem and believe me, I want to talk about comedy and because we got Mark here, but there's yeah, my dating life is comedy. But I think people and I've read articles that say that now everything is online to where girls don't want to be talked to at a bar. That is now over.
All right.
I know it doesn't make sense to me either.
Right,
but
now,
girls
stop talking on the phone.
Yeah,
which to me is
girls
the most,
do not want to be talked to
it's
at the bar.
Most fucking
it's sexist.
Thing.
It's like sexist to hit on a woman at a bar. Apparently.
For the first 89.4 years of phone's existence,
sure,
women would hog it.
Yeah.
And talk on it at all times. To the point where they do like Bye Bye Birdie, where they do a split shot with like 18 chicks and a fucking thing yapping on the phone. Now they're like, I don't want to talk on the phone. My wife has a friend who's like, I hate the phone. I'm like, you have a uterus. What are you talking about?
The new rule, this is the new rules of dating. If you meet a woman publicly that you're supposed to get her social media, her Twitter or something, and then that's where you ask a woman out is like on Facebook later. Right. I know.
Okay.
All right. It makes no sense.
Let me just address the yoga pants wearing contingent.
Yeah. Okay.
That might be out there in the audience.
Yeah.
Who the fuck are you?
I don't know that these are.
Bob Iger? What are you, Les Moonves? I gotta go through your people. Who the fuck are you? You're a girl. And you know what? There's another one right next to you.
Well,
on the bar
apparently
store.
there's things
bullshit
now that women want to see your social media profile before they agree to date you because
now, Joel, I have heard that there are men in the world that look at women with the interest in having sexual relationships with them.
I hear that
there are
too.
Men who find women sexually attractive. Now, this is appalling, and this is abhorrent behavior. I've heard there are men who find women attractive.
All right.
And sometimes would like to look
your
at and or touch women. I've heard, Mark, have you heard this? Because it's not allowed anymore. It's illegal. You're not allowed to have sexual feelings towards a woman as a heterosexual man.
There's actually ancient artifacts in all cultures that prove that is so. That
you're one of them because apparently some people fucked
in
the 1420s.
Well, we're talking about singles bars. Yeah, I mean, it's that's what goes on now. So apparently that's over too.
Yeah.
There's nothing. The internet. Okay. The internet has killed meeting in public.
I would say
now ruined that.
Now, okay. Now, the bless the Justice Department for busting FIFA. Next on my list, I would send the Justice Department over to Jezebel.
Well,
shut them down. Shut that bullshit down.
I don't know that. I mean, again, this is something that, like, I don't think anyone's come up with like one set of rules, but it's become like, what do you call it? Like the public. I don't know if it's a tradition now is to not hit. You know,
maybe we'll do a topic for another show. We'll make up a list. The like top 10 villains of the internet.
Okay.
Gawker has got to be up there near the top of the list of like,
well,
everything they do is poison. All they do, right? And you've got a site up for
women.
I see you pulled up one for a story.
This is a defamer story on Louis C.K. But that.
There's another one.
Women.
There's sites that all they do is just throw heat. And you know what I mean? They just throw
off. Well, the women that will meet a guy now at the bar, it's considered slutty to meet a guy at the bar or something. And so it's just not. I know.
Mark,
I just have to take this in because
this is all.
I've been married 32 years, and this is just information.
Corey's been married for less than 3 years, and it's all new to him because it didn't exist when Corey met his wife.
Mark, tell me about the good old days, the sexual revolution.
What was it like,
Mr. Sweetman? What was it like?
Well, there was a sliver of time between.
I heard there was a time.
There was a sliver of time before.
An Elysian field, a brief but fleeting hour, a magical time when broads like to fuck after they made the pill and before AIDS. I've heard of this time.
Pretty much.
It was called Cloud Cuckoo Land, and men. Men have told tales of
the dream. But don't you feel
that... It was all the women going, women, we're going to burn our bras. And all the guys were going, we're listening.
But okay.
Is it now... Okay, let me ask you this then. Is it because there is this thing now where, you know, you are really judged by your online profile more than who you are? I mean, I think there's that,
there's
too.
A girl you and I both know that posts on Facebook all the time.
Okay.
Her, like, all the messages guy. That's his, like, her... Bit,
sure,
right?
Yes. Yes,
it's the messages that guys send her.
I know that
Facebook.
Girl, yes.
Now, I'm not saying that a lot of those messages aren't appalling. I'm not saying that women don't face sexual harassment.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that women don't face unwanted advances. But it's gotten to the point where there is a certain sector of the feminist intelligentsia that feels like any kind of contact with a man or any... It's like... It's akin to like... A Mongol horde
riding in on their steeds
and branding you.
It is. But it's also the rules are different. If the woman finds the guy attractive, there's absolutely nothing that man can do to be considered inappropriate. It's when the guy does. If they're not interested in the guy, then everything they do is inappropriate.
Right.
If they're interested in the guy, then nothing's inappropriate. It's black and white.
It's like the SNL skit with Tom Brady.
Okay.
Do you remember that one?
No, I don't.
Mr. Sweetman, was ass grass or gas? Is that really true? Did nobody ride for free? When you had that keep on trucking sticker on the back of your Camaro.
We, you know, to keep on trucking stickers were probably gone by the time I got my driver's license. I'm not that old. But I did have the poster in my room.
All right, there you go. There we go. Hey-o. There we go. All right. Did you read Cream?
Absolutely.
Yeah, there
absolutely.
You go. Boy, howdy.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's their offices were down in the corridor when they started.
And then they moved to Birmingham.
Birmingham and
the most rock and roll place in the world. Lester Bangs. Sometimes I'll walk
Lester Bangs was in Birmingham.
I live over by there. And Birmingham's a sort of tawny, haughty kind of.
Tawny, haughty, one of those.
A tawny, whatever. You know, it's uppity. It's a little bit of an uppity suburb, right?
A little bit.
It used to be kind of a little more down-to-earthy, but now it's very, you know, it's where there's a Maserati dealership. But, like, Lester Bangs. I will sometimes walk by there on the way to the movie theater and go, Lester Bangs was in an office right up here, and now it's nothing but gelatos and Lululemon. Yeah. That's all this
it is now. It's a high-priced designer shop. All right, let's talk about Louis C.K. Let's move this along.
Oh, okay.
Because Louis got attacked on two fronts this week, Aaron, since we talked last. He went on SNL and hosted, did a monologue, which, you know, people did not like. And again, he was attacked in a sense by feminists as well for a lot of what he said, or just people who were, the main points were that Louis's a little bit racist. That was one of the themes of the bit.
Well, that
and
was
the other
bits, yeah.
the other bit that
was
people
he
had a problem with.
I thought that bit was kind of answering to those charges that he was a little bit racist.
Well, he admitted to being a little bit racist, but in funny ways that are not really damaging to anybody. Yeah. And then the other bit was, and this was I think maybe the more controversial one was, people who molest children must really really be into it to risk every. It must be great. In their mind, to molest a child because you would risk your freedom for the pleasure of it was a weird bit that you have to hear, and I don't have the thing, and I don't want to like quote it, but people took it. I mean, you can definitely take it out of context, but even in context, it's one of those things where, like, okay, if a student brought those topics to me as, like, you know, I teach a comedy class, and if somebody brought those topics, and even if I said, exactly as Louis C.K. said, I would tell them, you shouldn't do that, you're not going to get away with that. Well, the audience is going to turn on you if you do that. Now, and then I would also tell people, and I say this sometimes, I go, you can't get away with it because you're not Louis C.K. You can't get away with this because you're not Dave Attell. Dave Attell can do this, but you can't because you're just this new guy. So in a way, I guess I'm saying Louis C.K. shouldn't get away with it either. Mm. And I guess in this case, he didn't. But did you see the bit, Corey? I mean, I saw the bit.
I saw it after all the criticism.
It was overreaction,
reaction, I went back and saw it.
I think Louis is a great comic. He's obviously one of the best. He's not my personal.
He's not my favorite either.
I mean, I would, you know, put a tell, and there's a few people I would put ahead of him. But because I don't go to the greatest of all time.
No.
Like, he's, you know, I'm not sucking his nuts like Derek Jeter in New York. I mean, but I think Louis is obviously in the very top
tier. I mean,
I liked the bit. I thought it was fine. I had no issue with
it. You had no problem with it.
Well, you know where you don't find racist people? Have you ever listened to the Tom Joyner show?
Yeah, well,
there's no racism of any kind.
There's that too.
Have you ever watched 106 in Park? No racism BET of any kind.
My feeling,
you'll never hear racism.
My feeling is that material is potentially, well, if Louis C.K. is playing a Louis C.K. concert to Louis C.K. fans, I don't think there's any problem with that bit.
Yeah.
I think when you go on SNL and you have this general broad audience that isn't all Louis C.K. fans, I think you can run into that. And again, I think any comedian being, you know, I don't believe
it's the responsibility of a comedian.
I applaud him for doing it.
Okay.
I mean, I just think he handled that as well as he could. I mean, that's when I listened to it, and then I listened to it again. You know, it's Louis C.K.
It didn't go over live. No. He knew it wasn't going. You could tell by watching him, and you've seen enough comics to know that he knew. But, you know, he's married to the bit. He's only got so much time to, you know.
Yeah, and he was sweating, too.
Yeah.
I mean, you could see him sweating, and I don't.
You could see he wasn't doing well.
I am of the belief, and maybe I'm crazy about this, and maybe I'm a little old-fashioned, and certainly younger comics don't feel this way, but I believe that the job, part of the job description of it, I mean, the first part is getting laughs.
Yeah.
The second part is making the audience occasionally uncomfortable.
Okay.
I feel that's part of the job.
I'm not.
If you're Louis C.K. and you're in a position, you're going on SNL, Your job is to push the boundaries a little.
Okay,
bit.
but I also
we need Corey Hall. We need,
I agree with you, but
that's your fucking job.
I understand.
You're
that,
a comic. Your whole job is to say these are how things are.
Yes.
And these
are
how things.
I don't agree
be.
That Louis C.K. needs to apologize for that, but that's not something. A comic never needs to apologize for fucking anything. Although he bombed by my definition. He, you know, did not do well in
the
front of
the audience. The material was a little bit outside the realm of what they wanted.
So that's just my thing with it, is that I agree Louis C.K. did not do well. I think it does sort of tarnish his image on some level, because there are people where he is the second coming of Christ when it comes to comedy. And
Those aren't the people that are offended by him, though.
No, I understand that, but I think even people that look at people that are really hardcore Louis fans kind of have to look at that and go, yeah, even
okay,
even
if people
I won't
are tuning
into
SNL,
yeah,
which airs on 11:30
on
a Saturday night,
yeah,
and has for 40 years,
sure,
and has been a home of every controversial comedian you can think of at some point or another. If you tune on SNL to go, I just want to be, I want to hear the nice man say some nice things. Go watch James Corden.
No, I'm not arguing with the subject matter. I think what he did, but I think when you choose subject matter like that, you know, it's more likely than not that you're going to fail, even when you are Louis C.K., even when you are skilled. That sort of subject matter is going to make an audience
uncomfortable. The big problem with Louis, which affects our lives and your life when you teach a comedy class,
yeah,
and your life when you run your open mic,
yeah,
on club in Ypsilanti.
Yeah.
And we talk about that all the time.
Sure, yeah.
These are the problems that, and then when I occasionally host an open mic or go to one, the problem with Louis C.K. isn't Louis C.K.
No.
The problem is Johnny Fingershits, who comes in and does your workshop or your open mic.
Really? Fingershits? That's the guy you're picking on?
Yeah.
Of all the guys?
Uh-huh. No, I mentioned he's got such potential fingers. Here he comes, Kenny Lopez, and he comes up there and he does whatever. And yeah, the kid's not fucking...
Well, that's the thing. Guys, and I tell some of them, you know, you're not Dave Attell. You're not going to get away with, you know, you're not Louis Black. You're not Louis C.K. You're not going to get away with that shit. You know, I mean,
and some of these kids don't even. We got a guy at the UnClub who won't go unnamed.
Yeah,
but anti-women, yeah, anti-Semitic. You know, just
wasn't finger shits.
No,
it
wasn't.
No,
finger
it was
shits.
Not finger shits.
Shits.
But you know, I don't think until somebody tells him,
yeah,
that women won't like that,
right? Yeah,
and sure, that's anti. He doesn't sure know.
Well,
I mean,
well,
just,
and
I mean,
you know, Mark Ridley at one point didn't work me for about a year, or maybe a year and a half, because he came over and said, "You're a little misogynistic," and this was like I was my mid-20s or something,
yeah,
and I'd already been working at the club,
right?
And it was really one specific bit that I was doing, and I dropped it. But I did. There are times you have to think about that, and you have to sort of
sure
pull back and think about. You're right. Your audience is half women.
Yeah.
So you have to find a way, yep, to make your material. I would go up and do the bitches don't want to talk on the phone anymore. But like, you have to make it. You have to make it in a way that is going to be presentable. Maybe Louis went beyond. The presentable portion of that. But I think that's his job, is to find out where the wall is.
Yeah, and you also have to. You also have to, like, you know. The part of the problem, too, is that new comedians hear these stories when their people are interviewing a famous, successful comedian, which is the guys who get interviewed on television. They'll say, a guy told me not to do this, and I said, fuck you, and I did whatever I wanted. And you hear that story,
right,
from the successful comedian. You're all the successful comedian goes, I don't care whatever it took, man. I just wanted to do stand-up. I didn't want to do anything else. I didn't give a shit. I would never quit, you know, blah, blah, blah. The problem is you don't hear the guy who is now one will touch in comedy because his material was so offensive. That guy's not being interviewed.
Or the 800 equally funny people.
Yeah. So, I mean,
that is the problem, people think...
The success stories, people think that's immediately going,
like,
to...
That's the blueprint for comedy success.
But there were a variety of other factors that played in.
The blueprint for comedy success is just, I'm going to do whatever the fuck I want, and I'm not going to let anybody tell me anything different. That's not the blueprint for success. Yeah, you hear an interview with one of these guys who says that, oh, I just did whatever I wanted, and guys would tell me no.
Louis is only having success now, and he's only become a big star in his mid-40s.
Mm-hmm.
Which meant he spent 20 years doing
all
this, you know, all the stuff he had to do.
Go back
and
look at
also came up with, here's a big thing that nobody tells you.
Yeah.
Who are you lucky enough to be around?
Well, sure, yeah.
Because look at all of Louis' friends.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? All the Attells and the Mark Marins.
Well,
and
Chris
all
Rock.
Chris
he
Rock.
Did a
lot
he
of
was
in a position him, where yeah. he had all this talent around him.
He wrote for Conan for a while, too,
yeah.
didn't he?
Yeah, yeah, he was one of the original writing crew. Him and Robert Schimmel, him and Dino Stampopoulos were like the original brain trust of Conan.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, but I think that's the biggest mistake I see from, you know, not the there's probably bigger mistakes, but I hear that all the time from guys that, like, you know, I'll say, hey, maybe you shouldn't do that. And they're like, well, everybody
But like Carlin and Pryor knew each other in the coffee shops and stuff.
Sure.
You know, so there's this thing where sometimes talent, you're in a right position and you're around the right people and you get to be great because of that, which guy Jimmy Fingershits doesn't understand that.
Yeah.
That, you know, the open mic at the bar in Lansing is not going to really be the springboard.
And there's a time and a place to plant your flag and have that fight.
Well, we got
to
figure out. We got to figure out how to get the number of new comics funneled properly.
Yeah,
because it just
you mean having gigs?
No, because funneled properly.
Uh-huh.
Because there are some people...
You mean their money goes into your pocket?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what... No.
How do
stop,
we do that?
Stop
no,
talking about my comedy class.
No,
let's get back
no,
to
no,
my topic.
No,
sorry,
yeah,
please.
No, what I'm talking about is... and I just noticed this over the last 3 years, I guess, is that with all these clubs having 8 or more graduates
yeah.
every, you know, 2 or 3 times a year...
Sure.
You know, we're putting another 80 comics a year out
yeah.
there that are, you know, all...
Yeah.
And so at some point, I don't know how we did it before.
Yeah.
But we were able to get people to fall by the wayside.
Yeah.
And it usually was they weren't getting spots.
Sure, yeah.
And so they knew
yeah.
maybe this isn't for me.
Yeah.
But now they'll wander off into other areas.
Yeah, well,
and still
I've,
get spots
I've beaten
stuff.
That. I mean, I don't know what the solution is, but I've described that problem here as just, you know, a lot of the clubs now, nobody cares. I mean, I believe that in a lot of bar open mics and bar comedy has really just become like karaoke. It's just background. People don't go there necessarily to watch the show. People go there to, you know, everybody's a performer. There's not that barrier to entry to it like
right.
there used to
well,
be. It's become a thing that people just do as a hobby.
I think again, much like in the late 70s when they were moving from nightclubs and coffee shops into comedy clubs.
Right.
Yeah.
I think we're now moving into a new era away from comedy clubs.
No, I think so,
What's
too.
What's going to replace them is we're probably going to go back to fucking coffee shops.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's we're moving into
a
different direction.
I mean, my feeling is you know, that a lot of this is trendy. A lot of this is the thing to do right now. And I think we'll drift away from that on some level. So
yeah.
a lot of that will fall away. But I also think that's the new reality is, you know. And the problem is, you know, these kind of shows that people. And again, when I say people, you know, in Detroit, when I say people popularize these or these are becoming the new thing, they're still poorly attended by traditional comedy standards.
Right,
I mean,
right.
there's still 20 people there or something, and you know, people are like, well, what a great crowd. And
everyone's
going to look at that and go,
well,
oh,
here's
But the thing is, how do you make money at it? Where do guys like me, Corey? But I'm saying, where, you know, you become the dinosaur when you're saying, I'm not going to play that game of the showcase show for no money. You know, I'm not going to play that game of, oh, I'm you know, I'm fifth on a bill with 12 guys. You know, if you don't want to do that, you're just not going to end up doing it.
Yeah.
Well,
nothing wrong with that.
Okay.
A couple weeks ago, maybe it was the last show, we talked about that. What was the article? And
there was 2 shows ago. Yeah, the article about the back of the comic book store becoming
the
new.
What was it?
I can find the article. It was on what the fuck was the name of the website? It was on Vulture.
Vulture.
Yeah.
That article wasn't completely wrong.
No.
Except that a financial model for that business that they're talking about how comedy fans are now specific intended. You know, they're now following people because they like their podcast.
Right.
Which hasn't ever worked for fucking for us. But,
you have the oldest podcast in the country.
Work? We
right.
are the first comedian
oldest podcast in the country.
We
10
did our,
years old.
We did our first podcast
going
on
11.
A crystal set. That's how fucking old we are. But
in Windsor.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. We started in the cast corridor. I don't know if anyone
exactly.
mentioned that.
Well, you know, the Unclub is like that. The Unclub is in the back of a resale shop.
Okay.
And they just have they had some space there.
Right.
And the Emerging Arts Theater, Tim Henning is the creator of that. And he runs all kinds of theatrical type
okay.
things there. It's a small box Yeah. What they call small box. 50 seats.
Yeah.
Small box studio theater. It looks like the place is on Melrose, where I used to take acting lessons in L.A. And so, and he, Chili Chalice approached him about doing his dojo there because it's perfect setup or something like that. And the dojo is where you do workshop on, everybody's material. And then Chili has always done it in bars where after they were doing this for a couple hours on a Saturday or Sunday, whatever, take a couple hour dinner break, and then we'll come back and we'll
perform,
and then we'll have audience that come in to see a comedy show. And you just let them know, though, that it's people that are doing this as working stuff out. If you got 2 minutes, you do 2 minutes. If you got 12 minutes, you do 12. You know, and it wasn't like that set. It's what Chili would decide how much time you got based on how much material you had developed. And when he got to the Mixed Studio Theater in Ipsy, he asked me to take it over. He says, because we'd like to include more than just the kids that are in the workshop. Yeah, right. We'd like to include the community. And that's how that all came about. And that's sort of like the back of the bookstore type
thing.
It's
just
not a bookstore.
I mean,
it's a dress shop.
Think we are going to find interesting new venues.
And that, I think that's
formats.
Fine, but I also think that you only get good sort of having that. You know, when you talk about how do we, you know, funnel these people, how do we, you know, vet these people and make them good comics, it's only having that rejection of, you know, if you're going into a place and you say, we don't really care if you're good or not, that's not making good comics. Whether the audience has an expectation that this is going to be good, and that's when people have paid their money, that's when people are going somewhere to see a star, and the openers have that opportunity to grab onto that or not. And I just feel like, you know, I feel like a lot of this stuff is just the community theater of comedy.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's good for the business as a business.
Well, I tell a lot of comics that that come to the Unclub that you should not consistently be the best comic at your open mic.
Okay.
If you've become that good, you have outgrown.
Sure.
You have outgrown that open mic.
Yeah.
And you should not. You should be going someplace where you can learn.
I think that's good advice. Yeah.
You can learn from others who are better at it.
But you get to the point where are those places? I mean, look in Michigan. How many of the professional comedy clubs have closed? I mean, the places I used to play when I started out in like the early 2000s, most of those are gone. Where I was an MC, a weekend MC.
Right. I mean, and
I mean, more than half of them are gone.
We got a lot of work on a weekly basis from those clubs that are gone there.
Yep.
The problem with, much like everything else in this country, the middle class is gone.
Yeah.
And that's what's killing the comedy. Right. When the comedy clubs go away, and the ham
are
and eggers.
Are we the canary?
Well, I'm just saying. No, it's the ham and eggers that play the penguin. What is what's the penguin in Dubuque? There's a club that's called like the Penguin House.
Okay.
Right. I can't think of it. You know what I mean? But like all those Iowa City, all those little comedy shops where the average a road ham and egger comic, those are going away.
No.
Jimmy Walker.
Doesn't mean the
Whitmore
comedy
Lake,
business is going away?
Yeah. Whitmore Lake, O'Mara's, and
he did Joey's.
And Joey's in the span of 2 weeks.
Yeah, I was with him. I opened for Jimmy
and
at the O'Mara's.
It only took him 40 years to go from superstardom to Whitmore Lake.
Jimmy had a great, I guess I can tell it here real quickly. Jimmy had a great story about Steve Martin that he told me about how him and, you know, he said there was a rat pack of comics in the late 70s. And he was in it with guys like Freddie Prinze and, you know, a bunch of other guys. Steve Martin was not considered the cool guy. He was not in the clique.
Right.
But Steve Martin was a writer for Smothers Brothers and all these other shows. And people respected Steve as a writer, but thought that as a performer, he'd never make it. So they were backstage once, and Jimmy pulled Steve aside and said, listen, I'll be honest with you, Steve. You got a great writing gig. Why don't you just stick with that? The performing thing, it's not going to work out for you. It's not going to happen. And sure enough, 6 months later, Steve Martin became Steve Martin.
Right, exactly.
And Jimmy goes, and now he's got this, you know, world class collection of artwork, and I'm playing O'Maris on a Sunday night. And I go, yeah, I hear you. You know, so he told that story with some humility, and it was really nice. But I do think that, you know, the problem with it is, you know, where do you go to make money? Where do you go to do that? And if you know, you're having an all volunteer comedian, you know, if those are the guys, that's like, yeah, what do you do?
I
you know,
feel like millennials are not money driven in a lot of ways.
No, and
although I know the tech billionaire kind of kids are.
And the Vulture article said, well, look, they're plucking these guys out for Comedy Central shows, and it's like, yeah, but that's a handful of guys. in a handful of cities. That's not, we're not all going to get our Comedy Central sketch show and become superstars.
I think in a certain way, though, the younger generation has been sold the same fucking mythology that your generation got sold, which is you can all be millionaires.
Yep.
Yeah.
And how about we just all make a little bit of money?
Yeah that'd be
that's what I
where
know.
Is the, no, the working class comedian, no, you know, the, is not, no, is disappearing.
Because the overlords say, no, that's not freedom, you know.
That's
socialism.
People, but the comedians made money because people wanted to go to the club. They had no problem spending $20 to watch a comedian.
How I'm working right now. Yeah. Because, I mean, I get a lot of these gigs that are, I just did one up in Saginaw that was 275 people.
Yeah.
That's everybody that lives in Saginaw.
Well, I know, but it was, you know what I mean? It was for, it was a fundraiser that I got paid for. Now, fundraisers that they put together, the new comics put together, goes, oh, well, we thought you'd give it because it's for a good charity.
Yeah, right.
I go, well, yeah, I can't do that. If I'm not doing any...
The first funds that are raised are for me.
Yeah, if I'm not doing anything else, and I believe in your charity, I will consider it.
Yeah.
But right now, I'm getting, five bills to go up to, and some gas money.
No, I have given money back on occasion.
Yeah, sure. I have, too.
Once in a while, I do a charity, and I'll give them back a little bit of money. But I've never done a charity show for free.
Yeah,
I've given the whole check back yet, but I want to know that they're willing to pony up.
That's not how fundraisers work anyway. I mean, when you hire a star to do your fundraiser, they're not working
for
free.
I'm not a star. So.
But, I mean, if you did, so I don't know why it's any different. You're doing the same job. You know, if they hire Seinfeld to do their fundraiser and they hire you, you're doing the same job.
Yeah, that's true.
And I'm not saying, and if Seinfeld's doing it for 50 grand or whatever Seinfeld's getting, it's probably more than that. You know, to throw you 500 is not, isn't ridiculous. But yeah, that is the deal. And you know, part of the problem with comics, too, is, and we're going to get to this because America's Got Talent came on. And I know I do this rant with every America's Got Talent and every last comic standing. But, you know, there was a time when you could
Louis
present...
We're
not going to talk about him jerking off? Fuck.
Yeah.
I guess we have to. So Louis C.K. And then there was a blind item years ago about famous comedian with a crystal clear reputation was in a hotel room with two female comedians who were a team, which, you know, that narrows down when you're doing a blind item, an all-female comedy team.
Yeah.
And that he was inappropriate with this... female, and he masturbated. He whipped out his penis, and so for years people
Rita
were speculating.
Rudner,
yes,
and Judy Tenuta.
Yes, that was the team.
Was that the team?
People have narrowed it down
Tenuta
to that.
And Rudner,
and it was
I'm trying to think of another female comedy team.
Well, the one I mean,
oh, you know who it is?
Lucille Ball and Ethel Merman.
There's only one that I know who it is.
But, I mean, according to the blind, and because now this has come out too, because another guy
said he did it to him too.
The accusation is that Louis C.K. Yes. will hit on girls after the bar. He'll take them back to his hotel.
Wait a second,
and he will. No,
are you attempting to tell me that a popular, financially successful entertainer enjoys having sexual relations with women,
but apparently it's not mutual because he gets inappropriate before, even though I'm sure girls will sleep with him again. Remember we talked about Cosby and we said why would Cosby knock out a woman? Any girl would sleep with Cosby in the 1970s or 80s. Any woman in the world would sleep with Cosby. Why would he do it? Because that's what he likes to do. That's his fetish, is to knock women out. Apparently Louis C.K. likes to jerk off in front of girls, according to this blind item. And now there's this other guy who said a female friend of his had this happen with her and Louis, and so he sent Louis an email saying, "Hey Louis, why don't you talk about on stage how you sexually molest women?" And Louis sent the guy an email and said, "Why don't you give me your number and I'll call you?" So that's where this story comes from. Louis C.K. called a guy who was accusing him privately.
So the story
of sexual,
is that Garfunkel and Oates went back up to his
room. That is Garfunkel. That's who they're attributing.
I mean, who else could
that's be? Well,
they're
attributing
Garfunkel
the only
and Oates.
Female comedy team.
Okay, so they went up. This was at a
this
festival?
Might have been at like Aspen or something.
Okay.
Again, no one's saying that's what the case here. But
they went up to his room, and Louis said, "Excuse me, do you mind if I pull this out?"
I think they might have smoked some pot, and then Louis whipped his dick out. I mean, that's what they're accusing him of.
And then made them watch him.
In
fairness to Louis C.K.,
yes,
these are unconfirmed.
Unconfirmed. We're not accusing Louis of
and
anything.
If I was in a room with Ricky Lindholm and Kate Micucci, I'd probably whip it out. I'd be like a fucking chimp at the zoo and just would furiously start beating it up.
Okay, do you have a, I'm going to cancel their booking. They were going to be on next week. And now I guess
book them, please.
No, I think
I want them to see.
I guess that's they're not coming now.
My medium-sized
unfortunately
penis.
For our audience, they're not going to see. But no, and then you know, there's a lot of like these rumors. People are coming out of the woodwork and saying, "Oh yeah, Louis did that to me." Have you seen the movie Obvious Child with Jenny Slate? Has any either of you seen that?
No, I haven't.
All right, I saw that movie and I watched it again recently because
she's a comedian.
There's a scene where David Cross is a veteran comedian who says, "Hey, why don't we hang out?" And they go back to this apartment. And David Cross gets appropriate, and there's a line where she decides she doesn't want to put up with his shit, and he says, "Why don't you stick around? Because I'm just going to jerk off anyway." And people think that that might have been like whoever the writer or Jenny Slate at one point had an experience
now,
with Louis C.K.
Tell Garfunkel and Oates to get on his glass coffee table? Did that happen? Because
I heard about Louis C.K. And he had a story.
Red Skelton.
Yeah, exactly.
And Laurence Olivier.
Yeah.
Bang each other.
It was Danny Kaye and Laurence Olivier.
It was Danny Kaye and Laurence Olivier. Okay.
Louis C.K. apparently.
To the memory of the great Red Skelton.
But if I go back to. You got time, Sweetman? I know we're. Okay, we got it. The shows, you know, these talent shows come back. I always talk about why can't we just make – why can we not – it seems like television cannot produce a new comedy star. For whatever reason, these talent shows have been around. Last Comic Standing's been around for about a decade. America's Got Talent just had its 10th year.
But do any of those shows – I mean
– well, and again, I always say it's in the presentation. When Johnny Carson had a talk show and you go on The Tonight Show, you could become a star in 4 minutes. You would become a comedy superstar, get booked all over the country in 4 minutes. Why can't Last Comic Standing create a comedy star? And like people like Amy Schumer have been on Last Comic Standing, and right. But they've gone on to success, but not from that platform.
I think part of the problem with AGT is they make them perform over and over again.
Well, yep. I think that's
and
part
they
of the
fuck
issue.
Out the act.
But I also think that it is the profile pieces that they run before these guys go on stage. They made a guy, Rocky Laporte, who's one of the best comics in the country.
Sure.
They made him look like a sad, depressed
grandfather. They made Jimmy Schubert hold his dick and walk out the back door.
I mean, it's ridiculous what they do to these guys. So, Last Comic Standing came on this week, the debut episode. I'm trying to find the clip here. They put through one comedian on the first show.
With what they was that golden ticket or whatever.
Well, we'll get to that too. So anyway, let's play a little bit.
Now, how many Wonka bars did they have to eat?
Well, here's the thing.
To
here's
find
the
golden ticket.
Here's the thing. Sweetman's getting ahead of himself here. Right. Hold on. The guy now in the past there's been guys like Joe Matarese, who's a guy I know, Kevin Downey Jr., guys I've worked with that have come on the show, done well. I mean, guys with Geechee Guy,
Dan Natterman
from Detroit.
Was on last
Dan
year,
Natterman right? was on. J. Chris Newberg went very far, who's been on this show and is our friend.
Tom Cotter killed
so
it.
So there's a lot of Tom Cotter was the runner up the one year, who's a very, very funny club comic.
Right.
But then they do this, and again, I feel like maybe is it when they do these profile pieces, when they have to give you everybody's hard luck story, are people really going through because they're really great comics, or are they going through because of shit like this? Let's listen to the latest Last Comic Standing. There you go. Now, for the purposes of this tape, I actually cut out the profile piece, but believe me, you'll get plenty of what this guy's deal is. And I know Mark saw it already, so Corey, this is nice
to see you. How
you
doing up there?
It's Howard.
You doing okay?
Yes. My name's Drew. I have a stutter. That's what that is.
Uh-oh.
And what is your
Corey's
talent?
Getting angry. Look at him.
I'm a comedian.
A comedian. Okay. And when did you start doing comedy?
About four years ago. I didn't want to. Always do comedy, but I had a sports injury. That's why I talk like this.
So then they do the profile piece, and then I cut that out. So then we'll get to his actual act, which is right now.
I'm okay with my voice, but I still struggle with some things like I have the hardest time at a drive-through. You know, cause you got to say the order fast, and you're talking through an intercom. It's like, I don't know why I work there. But
I think if you can, if you can sit through one more minute of this. Corey.
I wouldn't get building to where pressure. People start to use my voice as the voice of their GPS. it's like in 1,000 feet, make a U-turn.
Right, now why don't I go right to it? You can hear Howie. I'm gonna go right to Howie's critique here. I've marked it down here. So
your does.
All right, here we go.
Did is you looked for the light at the end?
Let me go back.
Because
back
it up a little comedy.
Folks.
This is Howie Mandel now.
I rode him. So.
Howie, what'd you think?
All right, here's what I thought. I know you're here to make people laugh, but I can't tell you how emotional you make me. Because comedy usually comes from a dark place. A lot of comedians, you know, are depressed.
Well, that's true.
I personally in my life have used laughter to try to gain some happiness. What you did is you looked for the light at the end of the darkness, and that light is your comedy. And I'm telling you, I haven't been moved by an act like this up until this moment.
I'm giving the
and
light.
Because
yeah.
of you and because of this moment, I want to do something very special. Something I haven't had a chance to do, and I'd like to do this.
And then Howie whipped his dick out.
he hit the golden buzzer,
the
which
golden
automatically
buzzer.
Moves this guy into the live show. So he gets to
with
skip
his
the
dick.
Whole next round.
That was the crazy part. Howie pulled out his erect penis
and that's
and hit the golden button.
And it's
it.
Funny, when we talked about this before the show, Mark was like, you really need to see the video of this, but I don't think you need the video.
No, it's so much easier to listen to than
it is.
Was to watch.
Well,
watching,
it was,
watching it was
you, my
painful.
Friend.
So anyway, that so, was that was the first of all the comedians in the country.
I could
this
not,
is the guy.
I could watch him do,
yeah.
knowing that was coming up.
Yeah.
I could watch him do a Fallon show, like
okay.
a 6 minute segment.
Yeah.
I could not sit in a club and watch that.
No,
for 45
and
minutes.
I don't think anyone
oh
could.
God, did you horrible. See Josh Blue?
Well, I've seen. You know, Josh Blue has worked Comedy Castle as a headliner. I've seen him. And it's okay. I mean, it's fine. But this guy's not Josh Blue. I mean, Josh Blue is. I mean, but I mean, you know, why? Why? I mean, look. And look, if this guy wanted to do a gig, I'd have no problem hiring this guy and giving him $50 to perform.
No,
I mean, I'll
no.
go that far. I mean, I'll go to. And yeah, again, you can watch him on Fallon. You can watch him. But I mean,
I'm just saying to see him. To see
but,
him.
But America's Got Talent. They're trying to find $1 million act.
It's a television show.
Jesus fucking
and
Christ.
And this is why television always. I mean. It's funny, we're talking about comedians being on television, but television is a corrupting influence.
Yep, it is.
Even doing it locally for 2 years,
yeah.
I understand yeah. exactly how...
You were on TV every week.
Television is a machine that sucks every bit of drama and excitement and energy it can out of you.
Yeah.
It's like a vampire. So what they'll do is they don't care about the comedy.
No.
They don't care about the comedy, they care
no.
about the story.
Yep,
but
well, I worked with Rocky Laporte halfway
yeah.
through his last Comic Standing stint last
yeah.
year, and he had pretty much given up. I mean, by that time he wasn't supposed to talk about it, but he kind of gave away that he had already made the finals
yeah.
because he was talking about his upcoming schedule.
Okay.
And he would have to tour
sure.
with
yeah.
the show. So
right.
I knew that only the last 10 comics yeah. would be on that. We're talking about the same thing. It's sort of like it's not you give up your show, and that's
yeah.
really what you're doing. You're signing
right.
away whatever
right.
you do. You're giving away your image. You're giving all of that up.
Well,
in the hopes, he said, really, what you want to do is have an act that'll win that show,
yeah.
and then go back to your club act when the club start hiring you for that.
Well, but and then people who've gotten on television without an act,
yeah,
that fan. Have
but
fucking
but
that have that, splatted on the sidewalk.
And Dat Fan won because he had a hard luck story. He was an immigrant, and his parents had no money.
You know why
Dat
Fan won? Because the other comics like Rich Voss,
yeah.
picked on him.
Well,
and
that's true too. So there was that too.
They were in the
house. But
they were in the
feel,
house that season too.
Right,
but don't you feel like Rocky Laporte? If you just throw Rocky out on a show and say, "Here's Rocky Laporte," and Rocky Laporte comes out and is really funny, that's going to do more for Rocky Laporte's career than, oh, let's profile Rocky Laporte and show his little.
You can't do that on that show.
I know, but
that's
the problem with comedians on all these shows. And the exposure that the comics get now, you have to go do Last Comic Standing. You have to go do this. I mean, yeah, there's comics that, you know, Kimmel and Fallon. Fallon, I think, very rarely has him on now.
Well, Letterman,
but Letterman did
it. When's
the
last time Letterman broke a comic?
Letterman had comics on. I mean,
when's
a
the
lot
last
of guys...
time he broke somebody?
Well, that's a good question. But in this era of reality television, it's being harder and harder to break. Comedy Central half hours apparently can break guys. I've heard that.
That's true. That's
I've
true.
Heard that. And again, that's a setting where don't have all of this bullshit. The roasts have helped people.
Amy Schumer.
Yep. Amy Schumer and Jeff Ross and those kind
and
of guys.
And Lampinelli.
Lampinelli. Yep. Okay, so there's a venue that works. But this fucking venue is not a good venue for comedians.
Well, okay.
This is just Exhibit A. I mean, this is about as bad an example I've ever seen of that.
Okay, there's, you know how there's the Olympics?
Yeah.
This is the special.
Well, okay, no, I mean,
and I'm not kidding.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong.
This is not.
It's the comedy. And you're right.
This isn't really comedy. This is a gimp show.
The special. Okay.
This is a fucking gimp show. And what I really loathe about that program. Now, okay, Howard Stern's one of the judges.
Yeah,
I'll take Howard's opinion.
Sure.
Howard's known every famous comedian for the last 30 years.
Yeah.
I'll take his opinion. I'll take Howie's opinion.
Yeah.
Howie's a comic.
A comic. Sure.
I'll give Howie credit for
great comedy career.
Is it my favorite act? No,
no but
he's been around
successful.
A long time.
And been successful.
Actually, Howie Mandel's the kind of guy I find funnier in interviews.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
Not his actual act, but
right.
Like, generally find him amusing otherwise.
There's another phase of it that some people can't do, but he can do that too. He's good in interviews.
What I can't stand about that show is Heidi Klum's opinion about comedy.
Well, okay.
All right. You know what? Heidi, I'll take your opinion about peeing sitting down. Other than that, I don't fuck. What have you ever fucking done?
And I agree with you.
You crowd whore. You.
Well, you know, English is her second language. And last season, when Wendy Liebman was on, you know, she does a lot of wordplay and a lot of turnarounds and things like. She didn't get half of the stuff that she was doing.
Well, I know you're doing material, and I don't. I kind of understand. Like, look here. Let's think about
was Werner Herzog a judge that I missed that season?
Well, Heidi Klum is kind of in this. I would live.
Look,
let's think about
Corey. You're a talented, funny guy. You're a Heidi Klum. It's not going to make any dough in this.
No,
business,
I know.
So.
Let's think back. Let's reflect. Let's reflect on all the hilarious comedy talent that's come out of Leipzig, or Düsseldorf.
But
think about all the hilarious.
But the
German
show,
comedians.
But you know that the other three judges can override Heidi, and they did in the case of a lot of these guys that have moved on.
First of all, with that show, there's four fucking judges.
That's one too many.
What's the deal with that?
You can't have an even number of judges, assholes. Five or three. Fucking make it shit, right? You can't have.
Well, you have to get three out of four to move forward. And I'm not saying that this Lynch kid, what's his name, Drew Lynch. I'm not saying he shouldn't have even moved forward in America's Got Talent. I don't even have a problem with that. I just think that they've put the crown on this guy's fucking head already as like you're the greatest talent in the world. And it's like you might be funny for 4 minutes on an open mic, but come on, dude.
Do you know Chris Clark?
Do I know Chris Clark? I don't think I do.
He's a local
okay.
Comic.
Does he work with Jimmy Fingershits? All
right. Perhaps. But he's done Letterman like three times.
Okay.
He's really he comes up with some really clever, stupid human tricks and just bizarre stuff that's gotten him on Letterman. So that was enough to get him on Last Comic Standing.
Okay.
Three seasons ago.
Yeah.
And they made him the stooge.
Okay.
And he just was not ready for that.
And they made, like, how far did he just, the audition round there?
Yeah, well, he got
did he get
past
air
the time. He got airtime.
Right.
But the thing is.
Well, Harry Art and MC Sampler was on the audition rounds of Last Comic Standing.
On the day that he was to go out there and I mean, he passed his one without the cameras on the day in front of the big audience. And
yeah.
They decided he was going to be the stooge.
Okay.
And they had him wait in a room by himself for 12 hours.
Jeez.
So it's kind of like, all right, yeah.
It's a horrible format.
And so what they do is they kind of play like prisoner mind games with these guys sometimes too. To get, all right, he's going to be the stooge. We want him to be emotional and upset by the time he gets out there. So we're gonna put him in the room by himself and not give any communications to him.
Oh.
And then like 8 hours into the 12 hours, they go, Chris Clark, and like calling out his name. Like he's the only one in the room. Like, Chris Clark. Oh, all right. Just stay put. And then they won't go out and like for another 4 hours.
Well, look, that's the formula for reality TV in general. No sleep and all the booze you
can get. Right.
And we know because our friend John. His show,
sure.
They made him. It was a ghost hunting show, and they were like, "Stay up all night in this abandoned penitentiary." You know what I mean? At about five in the morning, you're going to fucking start to tweak out yourself and start seeing ghosts.
Right, right. That's we want you pissed off and angry.
It's just sleep deprivation.
We're not going to tell the audience why you're pissed off and angry because you haven't eaten or slept.
But, so unless you're the showrunner or the producer, you have no control over the show. Well, the actors, the writers are treated like crap. The actors are just put in positions to wherever they want them.
That's the problem with comedy.
The director does get some say, but not like the producers or the showrunners.
I guess Terry Fattore got something out of last.
Sure, but he's a ventriloquist. AGT.
Oh, him? Yeah.
That he got a career out of it.
He got a career out of it.
But
that guy will be working forever now. That guy makes like somebody said $18 million a year.
In one of my favorite moments on television since like the MASH finale, we saw a comic that we all know go on America's Got Talent, and Howard Stern bitch slapped him.
Yeah, that's true.
And took it like prison raped him.
Yes.
On television, told him he should get out of the business. Yeah. And that didn't stop him. It should have.
Well,
he should have gone
but
is it too late to be a pipe
actually,
fitter?
The Frank,
can I get in an electrical union? He should have quit that day because
you know what? Had
Howard
Frank,
Stern told him he was garbage.
Okay.
Didn't stop
him. Let me play devil's advocate at least. If Frank Roach had a hard luck story like this guy did, maybe Frank Roach moves on though.
Frank Roach has a hard luck story. He sucks at comedy. That's his fucking hard luck story. He can't tell a joke. He's a maroon.
Listen, you're just being funny for the sake of the microphone.
I'm speaking the truth as I know it.
But let's not.
I think I found my funnel.
Mark Sweetman, everybody.
All right. So Sweetman, what are you going to tell Frank Roach when you see him?
Frank, I haven't seen Frank since he and I did the first Detroit International Comedy Festival together about 7 years ago.
Well, when Frank pins you in the back room of a comedy club and with his fist in your face, what will you say?
Frank?
Yes. I've just heard that's happened to somebody.
For what?
For making fun of him.
Really?
Yeah. I've heard the story of it happening.
Somebody he would physically threaten somebody?
He physically threatened a guy who made fun of him.
Does he not know the law?
Apparently not.
There's good evidence he doesn't. There's real strong prosecutable evidence that he doesn't understand the law.
Well, I haven't made all my money.
Joel's making his notes on where to delete this.
How much show do I have to edit out here? Move on.
I haven't made all my money. I haven't made all my money doing comedy.
When you did the festival, did Frank pull his dick out and put it on the glass coffee table? All right, kids.
So Danny Thomas and Louis C.K.
When you do get your professional studio, please have a glass table.
Yes, I will have the Danny K table.
Danny Thomas table.
The Danny Thomas table. Yeah, and then we have what do we have? We have the cherry. Well, we have the hot. Who do you name the hot tub after?
Well,
the Nadia hot tub or the
it could be
the Jackie and Andrea hot tub.
That was like the week before her organs failed.
Yeah, that was
she
a sad story. Yeah.
Oh, anyway.
All right, let's move on. Now we're inside. We got two outside.
Oh, we're
getting inside.
Oh, we were inside. All right.
So Joel and Corey are in a hot tub with Nadia.
This is the grossest thing. I mean, I can't imagine anyone listening. Going,
no, absolutely
not. What if two burly, bear-like fucking comic losers got in a hot tub? Oh, God.
Here, I know someone who won't be listening to this. Me.
That's right.
All right. Should we stop being... can we stop being pigs for a minute and talk about Lena Dunham in her underwear on Instagram?
Oh,
can we do that or should
let's
we just...
elevate the discussion.
Should we skip that?
Let's raise the dialogue.
People were outraged by Lena Dunham in her underwear.
The bitch has been naked
Exactly. And we like girls and we like Lena Dunham, so we're not going to dump on her.
I
just think it's ridiculous to have that outrage.
It's the point where I'm like, on her show, I'm like, put a shirt on.
Well, I know. And then look, this Instagram, should I pull up the photo?
No.
I mean, have you guys seen
I've
it?
Seen
or,
it.
Or,
I've
but
seen
I mean,
it.
It's not.
I,
a, it's,
I don't need to.
It's not a flattering photo,
oh,
but
gonna
at the
it.
Same time.
Oh,
it's,
now you're going to force me to see it? Great.
I'll show it to you.
All right.
Suddenly,
can pull it up
faster,
Corey? Here. No, it's not flattering, and then you know it's okay. It's okay.
I mean, it's not horrible. Whatever we've seen her before.
We've seen it before, but there is some outrage.
There you go, Mark.
That's
this is Huffington Post.
That's the outrage. That's the outrage
that
right
I linked to. But
well, a girl with a realistic body shape.
what's the outrage? But
I don't know. That's
the outrage is that
she doesn't look like a size one.
She's famous and she. shouldn't be doing that on Instagram. I guess. What? I guess.
No, but see, okay, can we?
I know.
I believe the word outrage no longer means anything.
It doesn't.
Yes.
There are no boundaries.
Like gay used to mean a happy go lucky, you know, frivolity, right?
Yes.
We've taken the meaning of the word outrage and really just taken it all away.
Yeah.
There's no meaning.
What can I tell you?
We're outraged.
I'd fuck the shit out of Lena Dunham looking like that, but that's
I'm sure. Go ahead.
That's just me.
Go get him.
I'll pass.
So Lena, if you can just come over here. We'll book you on the show.
Nothing wrong with Lena Dunham.
We have an opening because Garfunkel and Oates have canceled.
Well, I don't know if you're aware.
Corey will keep it in his pants. And
I thought we still have an outside shot at Rita Rudner.
Oh, yeah, sure. Judy Tenuta's coming in next week.
That's right.
Diane Ford will be here.
I would not be shocked.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, man.
First of all,
I have a good Diane Ford story for off the air.
First of all, since you just did a show with Television's Kid Dynamite. At an all you can eat buffet in Berkeley that closes at 7:30. Look,
Diane Ford.
I had a pot pie before the show.
Did you?
I did.
What about Carol Leifer? What other veteran? Elaine Boozler
can come on. Sure.
Lois Bromfield.
Lois Bromfield. Who was the girl that was on Saturday Night Live on the first episode? Was that, who was it?
And
that,
never appeared again?
And she bumped Billy Crystal to be on. I want to say it was Lois Brown. Anyway.
I think you're right. I think that was
Lois Brown. Yeah, and Billy Crystal was mad because he got bumped from the first episode.
Yeah.
Didn't come back till 8 years later.
Yeah. All right, what else we got here, Corey?
Lois lives in London now.
Oh.
Do you want to talk?
Mark, do you want to plug anything? We wrap.
Yeah, why don't you plug
you
your
here? You can get on your road.
And then,
you got places to be.
I do every Sunday night. The Unclub is on 8 North Washington Street, downtown Ypsilanti.
Okay.
The only thing going on downtown at 8 o'clock on Sunday.
On a
night
Sunday.
Well, hold on. There's the Deja Vu.
It's across the street from the Deja Vu.
That's,
I guess,
on a Sunday.
For your audience, that would be a good
a
good marker.
Corey and I have a famous story about the Deja Vu. Well, it's famous amongst us.
Oh, yeah. Well,
yeah.
That's true. There's
actually not even a scandalous story.
I have a couple stories about that.
No,
Deja,
but the one that involves me and you and PJ.
Uh huh.
We have a great. There's a great inside story for a place called the Unclub. We're about as clubby as you can get.
Okay.
You know, but we do have a regular troupe of guys. I should mention them. Get them some. Get them some play.
Plug some names.
Yeah. Like this is getting them publicity.
Well, I just.
Amongst the network of people who listen to this show to make sure that their name isn't on. Yeah.
they will
be very popular.
Yeah, we haven't seen Frank Roach there yet.
No.
But anyway, James Boyd has become one of our breakout stars. John Mullenix.
Okay.
Tanner Oliver. You know any of these names?
I know Tanner.
I know.
I've seen Mullenix, and I know Tanner a little bit.
Eric Louts.
Tanner was on this show, actually. He did
it?
One of the live podcasts with us.
Eric Louts.
I don't know him.
He's really good, and I like what he does. He's one of the few guys that will work on 5 minutes of material and come back, and you'll see the next week. He took out the stuff that was unfunny and tried to put funny stuff in.
Okay.
You don't get a lot of guys. A lot of guys go, well, I know that's funny. I'll just say it differently next time.
A lot of guys will take the unfunny material and do it for 20 years.
A lot of guys will drop the fun.
But Eric just graduated.
Is the blade down? All right.
Guys will drop funny stuff just because they go like, well, everyone knows that. And they're playing the same open mic.
Yes.
Well, I've done that 6 weeks in a row. I better drop that before people
don't
get tired of it. It's like, well, what are you talking about?
Well, I'm trying to get some of these guys out at other audiences, too.
They should.
Let's see. Trying to think of some other guys. Those are the ones that come to mind every week.
Okay.
I like seeing what they're going to do. James does something different every week, but it's always – he's like our – I hate to use this because everybody – I hear it a lot now and people are kind of off, but he's our Andy Kaufman, type of character.
Yeah, we don't need another one of them.
I know we don't. I know. But you know what? When it comes down to making sure that you're doing a show, I mean, this is just when he's doing his 5 minutes and he's dicking around.
Yeah.
But when he comes to doing the show, he puts that aside and he does a show. And those are the guys that I only see at the Unclub. I mean, there's guys that show up that you know, like Blaine Hill.
Sure.
And I mean, he's a funny guy. And the one I really like, I wish she'd show up more, is Laura Witkowski.
We know Laura. Corey.
Yeah, Laura's got a show in Hamtramck that she does with the Ray and Laura show.
Yeah, she's been a couple times. I think she's really funny.
Her sister did comedy when I started.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I did comedy with her sister.
I've seen her sister. Yeah. But those are the types.
Looks exactly like Laura.
Mm-hmm.
They're twins.
She's got a twin?
Yeah.
Who does comedy?
Who did comedy like 15 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah. Isn't that weird? There you go.
How about that?
There you go.
Me and Corey, not twins. Not the same guy.
Sometimes confused for each other.
I'm confused for you frequently.
Yeah.
I don't know how frequently you're confused for me.
Once in a while, someone will call me Joel.
So that Sunday night show's
a
workshop.
And then I punched that son of a bitch square in the chin.
So that Sunday night
show's
a workshop.
No, a lot of times on Snapchat, girls will be like, Joel, are you there?
No, I don't fucking do all that. It's all you. Sweetman's plugging. Come on, let Sweetman plug.
Anyway, so that's our Sunday night show. Those
I'm sorry, I got lost in the plug.
And then every second or third Saturday, I think it's going to be the second Saturday in June, we do the All-Star show, the Unclub All-Stars.
No.
And that's people that have appeared at the Unclub that I think are worthy of getting paid.
Oh.
All right.
And we do a Saturday night paid
Not
gig.
By
does,
you.
Does it mean you pay them, pay or are they just worthy of getting paid, or they actually get paid?
Well, it's a door split.
It's a door deal, so they don't get paid.
It's a door split. You got to remember, we only got 50 seats. So.
Sure, yeah.
But you can always say you sold out a place.
Right, yeah. Well, you know, the comedian door split on like an open mic is like, you know, you've never seen money, you know, you start dividing cents at a certain point. You start dividing pennies at, you know, you get down to, because that was the first time I ever got paid with something like that.
Sure.
Never got paid. I got $10 at a show, and there was about 10 of us on there. I might only been like a month in or something, but I got 10 bucks. I was like, holy shit, I got fucking 10 bucks.
Leo paid me 10 Canadian.
No, 10 Canadian, motherfucker.
Yeah, well, that's back when the bus was 50 cents to get over. Okay. And I lived downtown at that time, too. So.
Well, you know, 10 bucks now, I would go, I'd punch
it's
a guy
like,
in the face
like
over 10
6 bucks to come back? Like
the tunnel's expensive.
Just
yeah.
the Canadian side?
It's 4
yeah,
bucks?
It's 10 bucks to make
round
the trip
trip, yeah.
round trip if you're Jeez. Driving, yeah. And okay, I think the bridge toll is going up too. I don't get over there as often as I
no.
used to.
No,
well, I used to work the Yuck Yucks over there when they
yeah.
had one.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
They started. They paid in American money, and then they started paying in Canadian money. And
yeah.
I'm like, well, thanks. That'll about do it for me.
I was such a legitimate comic that I actually had a work permit for Canada.
I did
for a
too.
While. Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
I had a work permit, and it was good for like 6 months or a year, and then yep. they'd renew it, and I'd go back.
Well, I think
as much as flash that fucking thing, you'd be through the tunnel in 2 seconds.
Back in the 80s and early 90s when I lived in Los Angeles, I used to use that permit, and I would say, hey, I've already got the permit, so some of these clubs I didn't want to deal with.
Yeah.
So I'd book Leo's, get the permit out of that, do Toronto.
Yeah,
Ottawa.
Sure,
I'd even go.
Yeah, once you have the permit from one guy, you just use
it
wherever you want.
Needed to, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good deal. And they don't even require that anymore, though, right? For Canada,
I don't know.
I don't believe they do.
I haven't.
I believe they've opened their borders to us.
I have not worked Canada.
We have not opened them
legally.
Yeah,
I have not worked Canada legally.
Canada's like a Yuck Yucks like owns the whole country now. It's like a cartel.
Is it really?
I mean, in terms
the
of
the Windsor one's not there anymore.
There's Leo's and stuff like that, but there's
no, there's.
But the big club chain is Yuck Yucks.
Only Eastern Time Zone, I'd say.
Well, okay.
I would say.
So
if you
Saskatchewan.
If you go west, well,
has moose knuckles.
Well, there's that big room in Edmonton.
Yeah.
That's not a Yuck Yucks.
Right.
That a lot of LA comics work at.
Yeah, I know. I worked with the guy who owned that, and he offered me Edmonton, and I said, I can't afford to fly up there.
What about Yellowknife?
we have a big fan in Yellowknife, and we.
I just want to work the Galt room.
Well, he, you know, we figured
what
out
about
the budget.
Banff?
Banff?
Have you worked Banff?
I want to work Banff and Galt.
We
what about,
figured
what
out
about Dildo.
The budget for us to get to Yellowknife,
Nova
and I
Scotia.
Said, me and Corey will come do comedy, and our friend John Tenney would come do like a paranormal lecture because that's what he does. And we said, we'll work out a budget to get
Look
to Yellowknife.
For the Yeti up there.
And we tried to figure out like the economics of getting to Yellowknife. And there was no situation by which we could even afford to drive to Yellowknife. It was that expensive.
We could fly to Edmonton, and then it was 1,500
miles. Yeah,
and
then it would be like a full day's drive. It was just like the most ridiculous trip. But it's north of the Arctic Circle. But that's why a lot of the stuff, I have some ephemera from Yellowknife over on by Corey's table there. There's Ragged Ass Road, the bumper sticker there. There's all kinds of Yellow Knife.
Oh, there it is.
There's all kinds of Yellow Knife paraphernalia.
Wow, there
that
you
I
go. Yellow Knife Canada.
Oh, that's
from
you go.
From the city of Yellow Knife. That came from Yellow Knife.
Guelph.
That very bumper sticker. All right, Corey, now you went to the drive-in. Do we have time for that, or do you want to wrap it up,
well,
say goodbye
well,
to Mark?
Yeah,
we've done almost 2 hours.
Let's
want to table that. Mad Max was good, though. We both saw it. So
there
we
you
can
go.
Just table that for next time. Everyone's seen Mad Max now. Every geek. It's become the geek movie of the summer. So good. Good for that. And that was good. So anyway. Right? Mad Max?
Well, it's Mad Max, as I said on Facebook, is like if all your heavy metal records fucked your fantasy novels in the backseat of a hot rod.
Okay.
That's pretty much what it is.
Mad Max Fury Road review.
It's kind of like they did a big budget, widescreen, wacky races.
Yeah.
But in the post apocalypse,
right.
With a lot more.
Well, it was
strangely rapey.
It was
overtones.
It was Stagecoach. It was the old Western of let's just get out of town.
No,
and get
it was
away from...
Stagecoach with a lot of people in fetish gimp wear.
Well, I understand that, but I mean, plot-wise, I mean, it was a very simple, you know, Western.
It is a Western,
plot,
yeah,
really,
sure.
Yeah, so.
And you've got a Morton
Stagecoach.
Joe.
Stagecoach,
yeah.
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 So it was good.
You got an industrial breast milk factory. That's good stuff.
It was really good. I enjoyed
I was a little bummed
Mad
out.
Max.
They talked about the Bullet Farm.
Yeah.
And we never saw the Bullet Farm.
Yeah, well, the sequel. Sequel.
You got to see Mad Max Fury Road, Mark.
I don't see films.
It's in...
this one's worth seeing.
They shot it in Namibia, which if you ever seen Namibia...
Namibia.
Boy, it's a piece of shit. I mean, we're not...
Worse than Detroit?
We have fans there. That's how bad Namibia is.
Have you played the improv in Namibia?
Yes.
It's a funny bone. Excuse me.
It's a funny bone.
There's a funny bone in Namibia. No
well,
hotel.
No?
But...
No hotel.
No hotel,
but free cheese sticks. So it's...
No.
All right, well, let's get out of here. Thank you, Mark Sweetman. Let's thank Mark.
Thank you, Joel. Thank you, Corey.
Did a great job. And go see
Mark
him at the Sweetman, Club.
Everybody.
Good, Sunday nights
in Ipsy.
Yeah, an old-timer.
A
veteran.
Let's just keep calling him old. All right, a kindly...
Next time, Joel, we'll talk about the time you had to usher me out the back door.
I don't need. I know not what you refer to. Oh, okay. I know not that story. I've never heard of that. That's not something that actually happened in the real world. But that is reserved for Corey Hall being ushered out of the back of the comedy.
I have never been ushered out of the back of anywhere. You would think with a rep like
that'd
mine,
be it. Be taking you right out the back door. But anyway, all right, thank you, Mark. Thank you, Corey. Thank you for listening. Joel Radio, we'll be back in whenever we're back. We're going to see some movies. We're going to watch some AGT. We're going to knock it out. We're going to whip our dicks out. We're going to do
the whole
thing.
There you go.
Live it up, baby.
Wow, way to make it exciting. Really sell that stuff.
We'll come back. When we find a guy older than Sweetman, we'll talk to you next. That'll be
Tom Dreesen. Henny Youngman Sr.
Tell us about your show of shows. And your time working.
We'll talk
there.
To Henny Oldman. Oh, look at that.
Look at what is that?
Those guys are still alive.
Oh, this is the list of guys.
Guys are still alive
that
are older than me. Okay.
These are all going to be Gilbert Gottfried's guests if we don't
It's written
up.
On a matchbook. What do you
Don
mean?
Rickles, Don Rickles, 89 years old. Jackie Mason, 83.
Oh. So Mark wrote a comedy bit for the show?
Shecky Green, 89. Norm Crosby, 87.
Okay.
Norm Crosby. Wow. Talk about milking an act. Take this job and shove it up your ass. Pat Cooper.
Pat Cooper.
80, the great Pat Cooper.
Yeah.
Irwin Corey is still alive?
He's still alive.
Is there Joan Rivers with a line through it? Is there that? Did he make up this list recently? Or
I mentioned
recently.
Jack Carter earlier. He's 91 years old.
I think he's old. Other than Irwin
Marty
Corey,
Allen is 93.
Marty Allen's still around. He lost his partner, though.
Oh, he lost his marbles, too. Yeah. I heard him on podcast.
He'll be on soon.
Jack Burns, 81. Wow.
Well,
look at that. Thank you, Mark.
That's quite a list. Out of music. It's time to actually go. Good night, everybody. Thanks for listening.